In just about 2 days, the moratorium on evictions will be over. And every single landlord in this country who has tenants who aren't paying is going to be filing for eviction and suing for back rent because now they can. See, a lot of people don't seem to understand how the economy works. They have this thing in their mind where they think, or this perspective, every landlord must own a million buildings. Every movie must be a Hollywood blockbuster. Every musician must be a celebrity rock star, not realizing that the overwhelming majority of this country is small businesses. Artists who don't make that much money, musicians who don't make that much money, small shops that do baked goods or hardware stores, and landlords who own maybe one or two buildings. Maybe a landlord owns a three flat. They live on the top and they rent out the next two. Well, over the past year, people have been able to live for free. Some stories are kind of horrifying that even though people were getting unemployment checks, this beautiful COVID unemployment benefit equivalent to about $15, $16 an hour, they were like, why pay if I don't have to? And now what? They'll get evicted, but they'll keep all that money, right? There are a lot of people who probably couldn't pay their rent, and so they weren't able to. Well, now there is going to be like a switch being flicked. If nothing changes right now and the moratorium expires, we are going to see all of the eviction notices go out on the first, very likely, and then by the end of the month, you are going to see millions of people homeless, unless the government intervenes. Which they might, because Bill de Blasio was talking about buying up these buildings now that the property value collapsed. Add to this Bidenflation. Joe Biden's inflation crisis. That's right. Real hourly wages have decreased by 1.7% due to Biden's inflation. So I don't want to be overly pessimistic, man, but I guess to everybody who voted for Donald Trump and said, do not vote for Biden. He'll tank the economy. He'll take away American energy independence. Gas prices will skyrocket. Y'all can say I told you so like 57 times. So we'll talk about all that. We're hanging out with Jack Posobiec. What's going on, man?
What's going on, Tim? How are you?
Bad. The AC broke. No.
The AC broke, but we've got, you know, we've got some temporary units up. You know, it's pretty good. This chair, though, is a little, I don't know.
Do you guys get comfortable?
Do you guys get new chairs? Yeah, a little
bit.
Well,
you know, there used to be these chairs used to have these really bad supports on them, and we took them off. Now there's no supports on them.
There's nothing.
Yeah, I usually lean forward anyway, but, you know, something, you know, people, the guests will lean back and they'll be like, oof.
Yeah, I like to lean back.
Yeah, you need something. So I'm doing bad because the AC broke. You're doing bad because you got no.
So it's a grumpy show.
Lumbar support.
It's a grumpy show today.
It's a grumpy show. Man, it doesn't need to be, but we're doing the new build for the new studio. And my assumption about what's happening.
Is that what that is downstairs?
The heat?
No, that one, it's like the room with the tools and the various implements of destruction.
Studio. And so because they're redoing the ceiling, we're hanging the table from the roof and a bunch of other things that are going on down there. It's basically the drywall's been taken down. It's exposed a bit. I'm assuming that the AC is just pouring outside. It's just going straight outside. It's useless now because that room is exposed, which wasn't supposed to happen. It's supposed to be closed off, but I guess they didn't close it off. So now, like, the entire second floor of this house was like 84 degrees, which means this room, which is
the third floor
of the house, it was 95 in here.
That's how bad it was when it came in.
Yeah, it was 95.
Wow. Because we were in Phoenix earlier this week for the Trump speech with Turning Point, and you know, we thought it was going to be really bad, but then it ended up actually being monsoon season, I guess, when we went out. And it was rainy and cloudy, and it was like, this is perfect.
Cold, right?
It was actually kind of cold for Phoenix. Yeah. No humidity, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a desert. You know?
So for us, I was like, this is nice.
No, out here, I mean, it's a tall building as it is, and plus it was 95 outside. So naturally, the higher parts of the house are going to get super hot. I came upstairs and I was like, man, it's 78 degrees downstairs. We have a geothermal system, so it's usually super cool. Mm-hmm. But it's all just spraying outside, I guess.
Yeah,
so,
as you come up through the house, it's like there's a thermal layer that you cross,
right.
And then you
it's
go
crazy.
Above that. And then it reminds me of how in submarine warfare, they talk about like the thermobaric layer a lot.
Oh, yeah. And then when we move the studio down, it's going down one floor and then over to the side. So one of the reasons for it was it's really hard to keep the studio cold. You can probably hear the AC going, people who are listening. So we're like, we should move this down into a shadier, bigger room because this made no sense.
I ain't making this drive without an AC. This is in my rider. This was in my rider specifically.
Yeah. We did get you only the brown M&Ms though. We took out all the other ones, the bowls right there.
Look, I'm saying is they taste differently. Y'all say that different M&Ms all taste the same. No, you're wrong. I'm here to tell you, you're completely wrong.
Do you know what that story was about? this like trope of the musicians who are like, I want M&Ms.
But well, I know it was in, was it Wayne's World 2?
Is that what the joke
That's was? That's what the, yeah, like the joke is.
But it's actually really brilliant. It actually started because I can't remember which band it was, maybe Bon Jovi or something. They had this big contract about doing shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what happened, maybe it wasn't Bon Jovi, but this band was playing and there was like a stage collapse or something. So they put in the, because it was done wrong. They said, here's our contract, here's what our requirements, here's the weight capacity, and they didn't do it right, and there was like a collapse. And so they would put in the middle of the contract in a random spot, there must be a bowl of M&Ms with all of like, you know, the brown M&Ms removed, and it must be sitting in our dressing room. And the idea was
to see if they'd read the whole contract.
Exactly. If they overlooked this and they didn't take care of the stupidest thing, we don't know what they didn't take care of, and we're not going to risk injury.
That's actually pretty smart.
It's very smart. Yeah, it's a cool story anyway. But let's talk about some craziness. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian is sick today.
Mm.
So filling in for Ian is no one.
That's right.
Ian's gone. Go to Tim Kessler.
You can just give me a pair of glasses and the orb, and I'll play Ian's part.
Graphene.
We should create a scene that's just an inverted, you sitting in the same spot, but we'll invert the image, and then you can put glasses on. And it'll be like, what say you, Ian? And then press the button, and then it just flips, and you're like, wow.
And the orb just kind of womp, 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 womp.
And piracy isn't theft. Oh, I got
Once
you, Ian.
Once we convert the economy to be a graphene production.
A graphene-based economy.
Based economy, then we can create the graphene-based life forms.
I think Ian has called for a graphene-based economy, to be completely honest.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Believe me.
All right.
I'm not just a guest here, man.
That's right. Hey, everybody, go to timcast.com, become a member. And you will get an ad-free experience on the website. You will get access to members-only segments and podcasts from this show. Yesterday, we had John Schnatter on, and he had to catch a flight. He's a very important man, busy guy. So we were only able to do a short, 10-minute or so segment. But typically, we do a little bit longer than that. And more importantly, you'll be supporting our fierce and independent journalists who are writing only the best news. No, they're writing good news. And I don't mean good as in, like, it'll make you happy. I mean, they're doing a good job of it. I think we'll do better. I think we're going to be hiring fact checkers. We're going to be hiring a writer whose job it is to like check framing, not just fact checking. We're going to have a frame checker,
I love that.
So if someone says like Democrats smell bad, they can be like, let's pull
kinda,
back.
Yeah.
That's an opinion, and you'll try to make sure that these things are. But anyway, don't forget to like this video, subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends. Let's Jack, let's talk about the apocalypse, I guess.
The slow apocalypse.
The slow apocalypse. Yeah, so we got this story from CBS News, I'm terrified. Millions in the U.S. face eviction as moratorium nears end. They say Levita Harvey is well aware of the federal moratorium on evictions ending Saturday. The Las Vegas mother of two teenagers lost both of her jobs during the COVID pandemic and has been unable to pay her per month rent. I'm terrified. Job offers are coming in, but they're coming in very slowly. It's the hardest thing to see in the world when you know that you're a single mother and you have no one to turn to. You'll be homeless. Harvey has been approved for more than $9,000 in federal rent help through a local program, but the money hasn't come through yet. More than 8,000 other renters in Nevada's Clark County are still waiting for approval. I'm sure there's a lot of people who lost their jobs during COVID, don't have any savings, and won't be able to pay rent. But I'm also wondering why these people weren't getting unemployment, and with the massive job openings and the major labor shortage, I'm not sure I believe all of these people were like, "Oh, I'm going to be evicted." Couldn't pay.
You just said that was Clark County, Nevada, right?
Yes.
Right. So I was actually in Clark County, Nevada for I went to the UFC fight. I went to the Rogan Chappelle show, the comedy show, and just walking around the different hotels and everything. There's a massive worker shortage out there right now. They could not find people for these jobs. So, funny enough, you remember there was that whole controversy about like, oh, when Trump walked in, was everybody chanting USA, USA, or were they booing? Which was it, et cetera? Mm-hmm. So everybody was asking me, which was it? I said, funny enough, I was actually outside of the arena when that happened because my brother and I were waiting in line to get some food from the concessions. But each one of the concessions, because there's so few workers, only had like two people working per stand. Meanwhile, the entire place is completely sold out, 26,000, 30,000 people. So just imagine how long that is. You're waiting like 30, 40 minutes. So I've got the order for like, we have eight of us out there. It was Will Chamberlain's thing. And we went and we actually hear, as we're waiting in line, we hear the USA, USA. And we're like, oh, what's that? My brother goes, I think that's for Trump. And I was like, no, I don't. I was like, nah, man, that, it wouldn't be that loud for Trump. There'd be something else. And then we go in and we, you know, we see the red tie. And like, oh, there, yeah, it is Trump.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back, it was the issue was that they could not find people to work those jobs, the snack stand, selling drinks, et cetera, et cetera. And so you have lines and lines of people. And then we started talking to the Uber drivers and we were talking to just other people in the hotels. And they said, look, we would love for people to come work with us. We're offering more money. We're offering more benefits. There are even some hotels were doing signing bonuses, right? Bonuses for just working the floor out there because that's how bad they're hard up for workers right now. So when some people are saying, oh, there's only so many job offers out there, I'm like, what's your aperture for those kind of jobs?
You drive a few miles from here and you'll see a Wendy's with a big old sign saying open interviews. They have signs saying like $1,000 bonus. I'm not saying a single mother should go work at Wendy's. I'm saying there are a ton of jobs that are desperate, and the ones you can see outright they're just all over the streets. Not only that, but, you know, we ordered pizza the other day. It was great. Papa John, he actually autographed a pizza box for us.
That's awesome.
I don't think he was trying to autograph it. I think he was just testing the marker to see if it worked. He was to see if this marker works, and they just signs it. And I'm like, we got to sign pizza box. I'm keeping it.
Wait, but was it a Papa John's pizza?
Yes.
Yes.
But there's a thing on it that says, like, we need drivers. It's like they stuck this to the box. Like, drivers are needed in your area.
Yeah.
And, you know, he autographed over it, so now we have to leave it on. But anyway, it's a great reminder that a lot of what we see in the immediate is what affects us. Fast food restaurants. We see that. We know they're hurting. Local diner. Okay, that's a little bit better, right? You've got wait staff. They make better tips, right? They're not making minimum wage or anything like that. They're doing a little bit better. They're also short-staffed. Then you move up and you start noticing that there's a total labor shortage across the board. There's no truckers. You know, for a variety of reasons, there's been a bunch of stories about this. Some have said it's because it's viewed as like an old man job. But now we're learning that there's a labor shortage in agriculture. You know what that means?
Food.
Food. That's right. And so people think like, oh, who? I hear it from these DSA young people who have no idea how the economy works. Like I said, they think, these people think that movies means Hollywood. They don't realize that the movie industry is actually.
No, it's so.
Massive.
Yeah.
There's movies you'll never hear of, you've never seen, that make money for these businesses. You know, I have friends who do TV production. And you'll never hear of anything they do because it's a local market. So they do commercials, they do short films, and it's all local market stuff that you're never going to hear of unless you live in the area.
Right, they're not on IMDb and everything else.
Well, there's shortages for all that. So anyway, I digress, right? We'll jump back to the labor shortage because I want to talk about this moratorium stuff. People aren't paying rent. And what happens come August 1st? When everybody, millions of people, tens of millions maybe, get served that eviction notice.
So I think the way to understand what we're actually going towards, you need to pair that with another story that just came out. And I know we haven't teed this up. We were just talking about it. What was the news that came out of the Fed today?
Oh, they're going to keep the interest rates low?
They are going to extend low interest rates.
Nothing's happening.
Right, acting like nothing's happening. So understand this, and coming to it from an economic populist model, right, this is all being done by design. They want those people to feel the pain. They want the landowners to feel the pain, the landlords, right,
yeah.
The small landlords. They want those landlords to sell.
Is this it sounds so conspiratorial, man.
And then
the Great Reset.
Because here's what's going to happen, right? Who are they going to sell to?
BlackRock.
BlackRock, Blackstone, and where are they going to get the money from that? Boom. The Fed, right? So they're going to walk right in, get the loans for it, and they're going to say, hey, look at all of these properties that just came up because these small-time landlords, because that's the thing, most landlords in this country aren't, it's like you said, it's like one guy owns a building, maybe has two buildings, right, a couple, and then they're putting a few together. They can't handle an entire year of not collecting, right? It's $9,000 for one person, but what happens when that's every person, every tenant in your entire building, unit isn't paying?
What people need to realize, okay, you could be in your late 30s, you're a millennial, you finally saved up to buy a nice house, and it's in an area, it's not the best area, but it's okay, it's a couple hundred grand. You put, you know, you saved up 10 grand, you were able to pay a down payment plus closing costs, you're getting in, and then you have a tragic loss in the family. You find out that, you know, your great uncle has passed, and lo and behold, he's left you a house. It's a windfall, but you can't really do much with it, right? this happens, and then you say, okay, well, how about I get a rental management company to take care of it, or I rent it out?
Which, and by the way, before you go down that road, that is how generational wealth is generally passed on.
Exactly.
Right? It's traditionally in the United States, it's through real estate, right? Someone either has a family estate or there's one house, and then that's passed on, and that's the wealth that's built up that's then transferred to the next generation. This is why they define it that way.
And that's exactly why I bring it up. So you end up through tragedy inheriting this home. Now you're a landlord. Now the left says you're the problem, you're the bourgeois. They assume that you're some fat cat Wall Street guy. No, it's somebody who has like earned generational wealth or received generational wealth. What happens now? You have somebody living in that property for a year who never paid rent, but you got to pay taxes, you got to pay insurance, you got to fix the property.
I have a friend.
So you sell. And
I
who
have
you
a
sell
friend.
To?
You're gonna sell to Wall Street. You're gonna sell to the highest bidder.
Wall Street.
You're gonna sell
That's
to
right.
the highest bidder.
Yep.
I have a friend who, not maybe like 30 minutes from here, who was in this very same situation, but he had a guy who just refused to pay, just straight up refused to pay, and refused to even apply for any kind of government support for this thing, and just said, "I'm not leaving. I'm squatting in this property."
What are you gonna do?
And my friend, I didn't even plan to tell the story. He spent almost 18 months. The guy's still there. He can't get rid of him, right? So this guy is just squatting in the property, and now he's still on the hook, my friend, because he's the owner. He's still on the hook for insurance. He's on the hook for utilities. He's on the hook for taxes, yep. Everything else, right, that you have to pay for owning the house, including maintenance, right? He could still be sued for not maintaining the place by the guy who's essentially now a squatter on his property, and there's nothing he can do. The state won't get involved. The local police won't get involved. And the guy straight up is like, he won't even talk to him anymore at this point.
The reason I wanted to highlight that side of this conflict or of this crisis is because people assume that all the landlords are ultra rich. And so pointing that out, it's not the case.
Yeah, my buddy's not.
I mean, look, he owns his properties right now.
Yeah, he has one property that he has that was his old house, and then he was able to get another place for his family and then make that a rent. Like, that was it.
So I will say, however, these people still are doing a lot better than a lot of the people who are going to be evicted, which is the bigger portion of that crisis. So I can only.
I don't think it's going to happen.
You don't think the evictions?
I don't think there's going to be massive evictions.
Well,
I think the government's going to come in.
Well, hold on.
And they're going to stop it.
Why would the government come in?
They are going to come in because they get to be the saviors now.
No, but I mean, like, what will happen where the government will say, oh, we're going to have to come in and bail people out?
It'll be that moratorium. It'll be that point where they say, where too many people from, again, this is Joe Biden's party, this is AOC's party, they're going to say, what are we going to do? We can't have any jobs. You have to help us. You have to come in for us.
They need the problem first, right? So here's what will happen. Right now.
So this story is like the start of the drumbeat.
Right, but the government's not going to be able to come in and do a bailout or assert power unless there's a crisis. And the moratorium is currently in effect. They could right now come out and say, we're extending the moratorium for another 6 months. You know, the unemployment payments are going till September 6th. They could do that. Maybe. I mean, we've got a couple of days. Maybe they'll say, you know, it was an emergency. We're going to extend the moratorium because of the Delta variant, all that stuff. And then all of the, you know, smaller business landlords will groan. Or they'll let it expire. 10 million or so, you know, however many millions, eviction notices will go out.
Notices go out.
And then there's a major uproar in the press. People start freaking out saying, I have nowhere to go. I have no job. I have no money. The unemployment isn't enough. I can't afford rent. The rent is skyrocketing because of inflation. What do I do? And the government says, we're going to bail everybody out. The reason I wanted to highlight the landlords, because I wanted to highlight the poor working class people who are being evicted, because they're probably a substantial portion. But the reason
I don't even want to say that either, because I don't want to make it out like I'm against it. They're being used as political pawns in the system.
Well, I mean, they're just being screwed over.
They're being put in this position on purpose by people who want more power and more control.
But perhaps, I don't know that I have any evidence to suggest there's a grand conspiracy other than conjecture and the Great Reset. And yeah, people stand to make a lot of money. But look, the regular working class people had their businesses destroyed, their jobs were stripped from them, and that is first and foremost, I think the biggest problem, the people being screwed over.
And we're hearing that more lockdowns are coming.
Right. But here's why I think it's important to highlight landlords. The reason why I wanted to explain that landlords are not all multimillionaire fat cats with a bunch of buildings is that when they're forced to sell, because they can't deal with a bunch of tenants who don't pay and they got to pay all these things they can't afford. And they sell to Wall Street firms who use Fed money to buy this stuff. And then when all of these firms, depending on how much they actually own, say to the government, all of these evictions, how are we going to do this? The government says, we will bail you out. And the government will write the check to pay all the back rent back to these firms who bought up the houses, who could afford to eat the costs.
Get right. It? So it's almost like you've got a big, like a reverse Big Short in this sense, right? It's like a reverse Big Short.
Yeah.
So instead of it being Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac on the back end, now you've got Wall Street coming in on the front, scooping up all of this stuff. The low interest rates are how they're getting the money from the Fed directly. And so now you cut out the middleman completely, and it's just the government and Wall Street. And you are the one, by the way, you as the tenant, eventually you're going to be on the hook for that. Or the people who have their rents that go up and up and up. You're still going to be on the hook, by the way. It's just that your landlords are going to be the ones kicked out. You're going to be the ones stuck paying higher rents. Now you're the, now what, you know, who knows what's going to happen as to the actual, if there's mortgages for this property, how much of that's getting paid. You, the, and the American taxpayer is the one that's ultimately on the hook for all of it.
I told you how I got denied a mortgage for a house, right? Did I tell you that? I tweeted about it.
I think I saw your tweet, but I didn't get the whole story.
Yeah, I'll say it straight up. You know, I wasn't going to.
It's because you're not white, right?
Probably.
Yes.
You know, but I would never make, I don't know. But it was Navy Federal, and they sent false credit
information. Oh, I love my Navy. Love
yep.
my Navy.
Yeah. They sent me false credit. They sent a false credit letter that had wrong information. It accused me of having delinquent accounts, which is just absolutely false, fictitious. It said my credit rating was relatively low, which is just absurd. And they used that to justify denying me a loan. And I thought that was really, really weird, because it wasn't just that. It was the 3 months where they kept changing the agents on us. It felt like they were trying to get me not to buy. And I was like, what is going on? Just, are we doing this or not?
Right. Because they don't want to sell to individuals anymore.
Yeah, so I'm not saying I can prove any intent.
Right. If
but
you're,
man, it was just weird.
Take it back, right? If you're a large institution, whether you're a bank or a credit union, why would you want to sell to an individual? Why would you want to deal with all the potential problems of selling to an individual when you know that waiting in the wings are these massive Wall Street institutions with the backing of federal money?
Maybe, but
I'm just talking incentives. Talking incentives.
I think maybe, but I could very easily guarantee, like, the loan was extremely low risk for them. It's just, you know, they for some reason jammed me up, made it impossible to do. And I bring it up because it felt like they were trying to stop me from buying property at a time when we're hearing about all this news where these firms are buying up property. We're facing this major eviction, this eviction crisis. And I think it's possible we see a bailout that allows the government to own houses and apartments. When they bail out these big companies that
100%.
Have bought up, they're going to own how much of these companies? And then we're going to be slowly moving towards government-owned apartments and housing. So you know what, man? You know what's going to happen in 2030? You will own nothing, and you will be happy.
This is Russian serfs. By the way, this is, you know, Russian serfs in the past. Chinese citizens today, by the way, are like this. This is the system in China.
You can't buy property.
You do not own property in China. The most you can do, I think, is a 99-year lease, right? From the government owns all of it. In fact, the word communism in Mandarin, Gongchanjuyi, public propertyism. It's literally the word for communism is public property in China. Yep. It's completely defined by public property. Now, of course, we're not calling it public property. We're saying it's owned by a private firm that's backed by federal money. That's totally not the same thing as public property. Not at all.
I think Andreas.
Completely different.
He put on this documentary earlier. I don't know what it was, but I go downstairs around.
He puts
like,
on some weird documentary.
Yeah, it was a weird one. I think it was German. It was DW. And it was like a guy, and he went to China, and they were showing him the social credit score infrastructure.
Right.
It was creepy, like a camera watching someone jaywalk and stuff like that.
Oh, with they did the facial recognition.
Yes.
Kind of like your thing pops
yep.
up. And yeah, we're only a couple steps away from that.
Oh, no, we're there. We are completely there. So what happens, I'm passively watching. I was playing Lode Runner on the arcade,
nice.
and then I'm listening to this. And the guy's like, wow, this social credit score is great. And they're like, that's right, because now these people are less inclined to commit crimes, and crime is going down. We like social credit score.
Wait. Crime is going... crime in China is extremely low, right? This, I mean, it's a, it literally is a police state. So yeah, right. If you want crime to be super low in your country, have a police state.
Right, right,
right.
Well, the next,
it's not really a thing.
The transition in the documentary was hilarious because then he goes to, I went to talk with Google, who is incredibly private, and you can't get any information out of them, and they refused to do an interview. And we tried Facebook, and they're also private and locked down. And he talks about how Google's devices, all these phones and everything, their microphones are always on.
Yes.
Always. Because there's the wake up phrase, right? You can say, you know, what's the phrase for Google? I don't know. I'm not going to say it because people's phones on the show
okay.
will. Yeah. So you say that in the word and then it turns on. But that means the microphone has to be on the whole time. That means the microphone is picking up ambient noise. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean they're recording the words you say in the conversations you're having, but they mentioned that Google does track sounds like car horns, and just other ambient effects where they can determine where you are and what you're doing just by the noise around you.
There's actually a function on your iOS where, I think you probably know what I'm talking about, where you can, it can identify ambient noises for you. Well, like, let's say you have your headphones in and, hey, there's a car horn, but you wouldn't know. This will pop up on the screen, there's a car horn.
No way.
Or pop up, I'm 100%. Or there's a train coming, or there's a dog is barking, right? It will tell you what that ambient noise is as you're listening to your headphones.
Yeah.
So as you're listening to Timcast IRL, it'll tell you what's going on around you.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
What I found fascinating about this was that they contrasted the Chinese police state and social credit system with the secrecy of Google and Facebook. And it's like,
no contrast.
Right. What's the difference? We've outsourced censorship and authoritarianism to private corporations to do an end run around the Constitution.
So this is what I've been getting at in Human Events. And I started with a piece that I put out on the 4th of July, funny enough. But actually purposely, I knew it would be running on the 4th of July, where they said, you know, write something about freedom. And I said, I'm going to write about how we're losing it and why we're losing it and what's happening, right? And from my perspective, it's really quite simple. I call it the axis of the elites between the 1% of the U.S. and the CCP, which if you do the numbers, it's like 1% in China is the 90 million members of the party. It's about 1%. It's
wow.
Like just under, right? It's actually a little bit less. It's like 0.7. And so if you go back to the 90s or even the 80s, right, they said, we'll let Hong Kong go back to communist China because Hong Kong is so capitalist and they believe in the free market and it's totally run by the banks, right? And it's all about free trade and this will infect the rest of China and will make China more liberalized. Well, that didn't work. And then Tiananmen Square happens, right, and everything. And so they say, well, we just need to let China in. So you think about it. What was the West's response to Tiananmen Square? Was it, we're going to isolate them, we're going to work against the regime, we're going to put sanctions? No.
Double down.
It was, we're going to double down. We were told by the free traders, we need to let China into the system. We need to let them into the World Trade Organization. So 1999, 10 years after Tiananmen Square, that happens. Antifa was completely against it at the time. So all along we're told.
Battle in Seattle.
Battle in Seattle, right. So all along we're told, bring China in and they will become more democratic and they will have an open society. They will stop being so closed and so authoritarian. The exact opposite, and this is my thesis, the exact opposite happened.
But Jack,
we became more authoritarian as our elites became more familiarized and more had more visibility into their system and how their system works.
The Democratic Party is learning quite well from the Chinese Communist Party.
So when I worked in the American Chamber of Commerce in Shanghai, and then I worked for an American consulting firm in Shanghai as well, we would have congressional delegations and government delegations. People would come in to Shanghai, and there was this museum over there. It was called the Municipal Planning Museum, right? It's kind of this like innocuous name. But when all of these people would come in, these dignitaries and functionaries from the U.S. government would come in and they'd take them to this municipal building and the museum, they talk about what their plans were. So high-speed rail was a big one, right? So the high-speed rail of Shanghai was one of the first that China ever got. And it actually doesn't even go all the way downtown to Shanghai, but it goes from the airport. I got to ride it a couple times. But then you ask the question, what about all the people that live in the path of the high-speed rail? And they said, they're gone. they don't live there anymore, right? You know, they're out, you know. Or what about all of these old, and Shanghai used to have these great, this old architectural style called the Shirkuman. And it was these stone apartments with like courtyard around a courtyard. So it was like shared families would all live together and then they'd all share the courtyard. And that was sort of like this big communal atmosphere where they lived. Okay. All of those would just get wiped out. I don't think any of them are really preserved. There's like one or two where they've been sort of updated into like nightclubs and bars.
Wow.
But none of the actual like cool architecture or historical features of Shanghai have been preserved at all because they've been wiped out. The people own them. The people want to preserve them. Who cares? Get rid of it. And so as all of these dignitaries would come in and all these U.S. officials, American officials, and there's Europeans all over the place as well, they would say, wow, your model is amazing. This is incredible. How do we bring this back home? Right. And they started to say, well, you know, we have all these issues. We have to be careful because we don't have this public ownership like you do here. So we can't just lease things. But if we could somehow get people out of ownership of their property, and if we could just move things around so that we could become more powerful, not only in terms of the, you know, the censorship and the authoritarianism online, that's like a sideshow compared to what they're doing in the ownership. If they can reduce the ownership class to just themselves and just really this gentry, right, then you don't have to worry about everyone else because you can shuffle them around whenever you've got some big project.
And what happened throughout the entire last year with the lockdowns, which they say may be coming back? How many was like 100,000 businesses or something, small businesses destroyed? When we talk about people losing their jobs, it doesn't just mean that
Jeff Bezos gets to fly his interestingly shaped spaceship around overhead while laughing at all of us from down below. And he even has the gall, the absolute gall of this guy to say, I just like to thank all of the Amazon employees when you've taken your trash can break to use the bathroom or use your bottle to go to the bathroom. I wasn't that direct. But he said, I'd like to thank all the employees and the customers of Amazon for paying for my joyride in space on my interestingly shaped spaceship. And I was like, man,
rubbing in your face.
Right. That part of me is like, I want there to be a space program and I want it to be good. Right. And I think that is better. But at the same time, you look at the guy running it and, you know, shout out to the guys who ran The Expanse, right? And that whole TV show and book series. And even though I think the plot is kind of silly, the setup that they have where they just kind of move the poor people into the asteroid belt. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
To do like the mining out there. And it's really still all the rich people just kind of control everything from like the moon and Mars. I'm like, you guys just nailed it. Like you just nailed it. That's what it's going to be like.
What I've been watching happen over the past few, maybe 10 years, there used to be direct upward mobility, almost like you could imagine upward mobility as a stair set. Not everybody would want to climb to the top of the stairs. It's like
this used to be a huge Republican talking point.
Right. But you could if you worked hard. I once during the hurricane, it was a Sandy in New York. I had to climb 35 flights of stairs because there was a generator on the roof that needed to be shut down because the storm could cause a surge and they were really worried. So we had to climb all the way up. I'm like, if you work hard enough, you can succeed. But now it's not what's happening over the past few years is upward mobility is becoming an inverted rock climbing wall. So most people, even of determination, are like, I can't climb that thing.
Right.
But some people who strive really, really hard and break themselves, they can get really good at this and then make it up that inverted rock climbing wall. What's happening is the path towards upward mobility is becoming a very, very narrow bridge where very few will be able to cross it. It'll still exist to a certain degree. But when the left talks about the American dream being dead, I'm like, well, it's the Democrats that are destroying it. What's left of it? So business ownership is being destroyed. Home ownership is being destroyed. The American dream was never that you'd get a loan for 100 grand, go to college, and then get a high-paying job. The American dream was you could come from the gutter, work really hard, and then start your own corner store and have a living and be independent.
You used to be able to, if you go back just to the 1980s, right, you used to be able to buy a home with like 3 years of the median wage, or the median salary. Right. 3 years median salary and you've purchased your it's a starter home, not like, you know, nothing palatial, but nothing opulent. But you've got a place where you can live and you're surviving. And this is why you're starting to hear more populists take up this message of we shouldn't, J.D. Vance got, you know, got a lot of hate for saying this, but he said, you should be able to support a family on a single income, right? Right. And they said, well, they said, he said, oh, that's sexist. He's like, I didn't say anything about whose income. I didn't even say which part of the family or anything. I just said, right, you should be able to do that because in within living memory, we used to be able to do that in the United States. And I think this is why, you know, there's always that sort of like boomer millennial debate that goes on about, you know, oh, you guys had it so hard, but you guys screwed up, et cetera, et cetera. And I think there actually is, though, such a generational difference between the baby boomer generation and then the economy as millennials were getting into the workforce in 2007, 2008, because everything had changed, where it was actually like they were speaking different languages completely across the other. Well, just go in there and hand them your resume and give the manager a firm handshake and tell them you want a job. It's like that, that, you know, and then he'll give you a job for the rest of your life, right? That doesn't, no, doesn't exist anymore.
No, I think it does. I do. Oh. But the boomers raised the millennials. Mm. And they raised a generation of entitled, entitled people. So, look, I got a job at a nonprofit that required a college degree. I didn't have a college degree. I'm a high school dropout. But I went in with firm handshake and I talked my way into the job because I had the skill, the talent, the ability, and the drive. What do I see with millennials? They spent 22 years in institutionalized learning facilities. They've never had a real job. They come out and then they're like, tell me what to do. I don't know.
Don't get me wrong. I am not. I'm not necessarily saying I'm a millennial apologist, but I'm also. I try to make myself an impartial observer of the whole thing, and where I and certainly baby boomers have played their part, and millennials clearly are the most neurotic, absolutely neurotic, self-centered generation we've seen in a very, very long time. But I do think the economics of the time played a huge role in that.
Definitely. I think, you know, if you look at, there's an interesting phenomenon where they show boomers still hold a disproportionate amount of wealth, even as they age out.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen that.
And millennials have almost none.
Right.
I also think
and
that's...
And so by, like, 2040 or so, that's when we think that a lot of that wealth is going to be transferring down. But at that point...
Will it?
At that, well, right, and that's, look at the, I mean, you look at things
I
like...
I think by that point it'll be seized by the government.
It'll probably get, or it'll be reverse mortgaged out because you'll have people saying, well, I want the money now, why should I,
it's,
you know,
it's my money.
I put in this, I put the equity in this house, why couldn't I have it now? Why should I leave this for my kids? What did they do to earn this thing? I mean, you look at how we've broken down the traditional roles of, you know, how a family gains its generational wealth, about how we support the next generation, how we support previous generations, by the way, right? We don't, you know, we don't live with our grandparents anymore. We don't have them in the home, right?
Right.
We, you know, we shuttle them off somewhere. And even the grandparents, they'll say, there was, what was it? There was somebody on Twitter who was saying this, you know, recently, and they kind of got hit on. I forget if it was New York Times or what. I'm going to screw it up, but it was like, why should we spend time helping out our kids with, you know, with our grandkids? Why, we could be doing arts and crafts and pursuing other things. And this is actually better for us in our age. And, you know, why should we be teaching the further generations our wisdom and our society, you know, our health? It's like, we want to go out to the next, well, you can't go see ZZ Top because we're just,
oh man, that's
just lost.
You know, I look at what's going on in China and I have to wonder if anything being said by the American elites is true. They're like, oh, climate change. Oh, geez. Hey, how's that beachfront property just bought, Obama? It's pretty good. Am I supposed to believe this guy cares about rising water levels when he buys beachfront property? Am I supposed to believe these people when they're buying investment property in Miami Beach? They're telling me all these things are going to happen. You make it really hard to believe when you don't lead by example.
Hey, they care so much about BLM and all of the social justice issues while their companies are in Africa using child labor to go into the cobalt mines and build everything out for our electric cars, for our cell phones and everything else, which, by the way, now is being done predominantly by China and Chinese firms.
But Jack, why are you complaining? They're helping you. Yes. You're an American. You know what's happening? Let me pull up this story and I'll break down for you what
we're going on. We can't do the entire thing in sarcasm.
No. But this is legit. Check this
right,
out.
Right. No. We have to like bring it down at some point.
We got the story from timcast.com. 50,000 migrants released into the U.S. by Border Patrol, just 13% show up to an ICE office. A new report from Axios is shedding more light on the chaos quickly unfolding at the U.S.-Mexico border. 188,000. A million so far, maybe 1.2 million so far this year of illegal immigrants coming into the country. Now think
That we've tracked.
But right. Think about this. will those people be able to get special COVID unemployment benefits?
Are they getting the benefits? Are they getting vaccinated? Are we? I mean, you go through the entire list of all the things.
Are they going to be able to apply for free money from the government? They're not. They're not the ones that, especially the ones that aren't being tracked. They're not going to get COVID unemployment benefits.
Right.
So they're going to have to work or do something for money. Right. Now, there's a major labor shortage. So it seems like Biden, sweating bullets because he doesn't know how to deal with the labor shortage, decides to just import a bunch of people to take those jobs. But what ends up happening?
Not the first time that Clark County, Nevada has hired, you know.
But take a look at the result, what the result is going to be. I have long said this. Many conservatives have mentioned this as well, that the Democrats are creating a serf class, that they bring in illegal immigrants who are forced to live in the shadows and get paid under the table. And then Americans don't have to do the jobs that nobody wants. You know, they say that all the time.
Right.
But these illegal immigrants, they do the job nobody wants. And I hear people say, but I wanted my job. Well, what's happening now? Americans lose their jobs, but the government gives them free money. Now you've got tons of Americans who don't have to work and don't want to work. Then you get tons of illegal immigrants. It's either work or sink or swim. So they're creating the serf class who's going to have to fill these roles and do the hard work that nobody wants to do. So say the Democrats.
Which, by the way, this also exists in China. It's just that it's in a way that a lot of people don't understand.
The North Koreans.
Because it's with North Koreans. Not just that. North Koreans and people and provincials. So there is a system in China called the Hukou system. And what this is, they got it from the Soviet Union. It was a Stalinist idea. It's an internal passport system. So, like, you know how you have a state driver's license here in the U.S.? So imagine if you've got a Virginia driver's license. Well, that unless you had a specific stamp, you couldn't get a job in New York City. You couldn't live there. You couldn't work there because you're Virginia, right? So if you're tagged for Virginia, you can't go to New York. You can't go to Chicago, et cetera, unless you get special permission. And now, could you just go and get a job and live in the shadows? Yeah, sure. But then you're going to be out of the system. And so when I was in Shanghai, this would happen all the time. The population of Shanghai, there are so many, they call them internal migrants, right? Think of that, right? Internal migrants. And they live in this sort of ring on the outskirts of Shanghai for the most part because, the housing situation just isn't really that, there's not much oversight of it out there. It's not very well regulated. And so what they do is they come into the city, they work, they do the construction jobs, and they go back at the end. So if you actually measure the population of Shanghai, it differs by over a million people, whether you do it during a day or at night.
And that's true for a lot of cities in the United States, not to that degree, though, like to a million. But it is substantial.
But they wouldn't be considered illegal workers.
Right.
However, are out of the system.
Do you know what cities like San Francisco and New York do? It costs $5 or more to come in when you cross the tunnel of the bridge, but leaving is free.
Right, exactly.
So what happens in San Francisco?
We used to say that in
poor people out.
Yeah, we used to say that in Philadelphia because we didn't want the people from New Jersey coming in.
So yeah, you charge them to come in.
Yeah, because you had to charge to come in.
Free to leave. Yeah, we're building a surf class. It's obvious. It's predictable. And that's the joke I make when I'm like, oh, but we're Americans.
So
we're great, right?
There is a great microcosm of this that everyone in the country can go look at, and everyone can see the difference between the statements and what's actually happening on the ground. And that city is called Washington, D.C., right? And when I'm talking about D.C. in this sense, don't look at D.C. from take the federal government out of it, right? Just look at Mayor Bowser and the policies of the gentrification of Washington, D.C., who's being kicked out, the families that are being sent out, the businesses that are coming in, the landlords that are coming in, the massive companies that are coming in, right? There are families that have lived in D.C. for 40 years, 50 years. They are all being kicked out to PG County, Maryland. And everyone who's coming in are these like millennials and DC Hill staffers and lobbyists and all that money that's coming in. And Bowser knows this, by the way. She absolutely knows exactly what she's doing. She knows exactly who she's catered to. And she will paint Black Lives Matter up and down the street in front of the White House when Trump is in there. But when he's gone, what happens? It gets paved over and she goes and she's kicking families out of the city by policy.
And when Cuba Libre was painted in front of the, I believe it was the Cuban embassy building, they came and got rid of that immediately.
Right.
Yeah, the messaging is only there when, you know, you're anti-Trump, right? You know what I love about these Capitol hearings is that they're literally crying. Like, Kinzinger cried. That dude is
the J6
sociopath. Yeah. Because those tears are not real. That dude was faking it. I will tell you that, in my opinion. Why? We had 60 Secret Service agents injured at the insurrection at the White House last year.
Right.
The, what was it? A guard tower? Secret Service tower was set on fire?
On fire.
St. John's Church set on fire? Is that what it's called, St. John's?
St. John's, yeah.
Insurrection. They were trying to breach the White House. 60 Secret Service agents injured.
Remember,
they laughed. Police.
They laughed at Trump for being evacuated.
That's right.
To the presidential bunker. And
because of their insurrection.
And it was
like a joke. The
president
was evacuated and the media left and mocked Trump and they called him Bunker Boy and they posted photos.
So imagine
now Kinzinger's crying?
You know,
spare me.
You know, imagine if that were Biden and Harris sent to the bunker, then, I mean, these J6 hearings would be... I mean, what they're trying to do, and I know you were in Ukraine when it happened, they're trying to turn January 6th into an American version of the Maidan Revolution. So... This is essentially what that was a color revolution, right? That happened in Ukraine. This is pretty widely accepted that was a color revolution.
Yeah, it was the president Yanukovych.
Yanukovych, right?
And he fled to Russia.
He was out the next day. The very next day.
Well,
was when the vote happened.
Euromaidan took a long time.
The day after the shooting.
Right. Yeah.
So you have this big build up, and then you have the one sort of, you know, you could say the denouement, right? You know, your huge, you know, climax. And then, boom, after that conflict moment happens, then you have the political change that you wanted all along. You exploit that and exploit the narrative surrounding it to get the political solution you wanted from the start. So you destabilize and you spend as much time destabilizing as possible. You have that moment and then you use that moment and you milk it for all it's worth.
Yeah, of course. The problem is... They're really bad at it. You know, you mentioned how they go to China and they're like, wow, we want this stuff. Yeah, but they're really bad at it. I mean, you've got a lot of willing participants, a lot of really dumb people who don't read the news, who just like, you know, I hear these stories about people posting comments on our videos and the people who work here saying like, do you really fall for this right wing conspiracy stuff? It's like, what are you talking about? Do you have any, okay, name one thing. What science? What story? What are you concerned about? Because I think, you know, we strive to fact check. And it's so funny that people actually just don't read the news but assume they know the truth. They just fall in line. They're the ones who want
their own
property.
That means they watch TV. And they know, like, when people say, oh, I trust the science.
I don't think they watch TV.
What your TV said.
I don't think they watch TV. I think they watch Facebook memes. No, it's Facebook memes all day.
Yeah, yeah.
And I see a guy and he's posting a meme and it's like, duh, there's bread in the store and a hungry guy outside, just give him the bread. And I'm like, what? I mean, like, sure, there are circumstances where we can just give the homeless guy some bread. But, like, that's not even a fleshed out idea. Like, what are you even talking about? They come up with these half-brained ideas. I saw someone, this prominent leftist, tweeted, with all the money that Jeff Bezos wasted, we could have ended homelessness overnight. And I'm like, no, you can't. Do you know anything about homelessness? Now, this one.
No, that's actually not true.
This is a perfect example that I can cite because I actually worked for a homeless shelter. I know for a fact money never solves the problem.
Right.
There are homeless shelters in Los Angeles that are completely empty.
Yep.
Flush with cash. And homeless people say, F you, I'm not going in your building.
Correct.
You can't solve it, but you could write them a check. They'll go spend it and they'll go back to being homeless.
Have you gone through D.C. lately at all?
No.
There are homeless camps throughout the city.
It's going to get worse with these
evictions. They're calling them Bowservilles, right? So they're Bowservilles, and it's almost under for Mayor Bowser. So it's almost like every tunnel, when I was still with One American News, I would drive up under the Capitol and then you'd go through the tunnel. So that entire area under there, it's all homeless camps now. To the north side of the Capitol, there's a huge emplacement. It's almost like, it's getting to the point where there's public space, with the exception of the National Mall, right? They're not on the National Mall because there's lots of rules and regulations to the National Mall. But pretty much everywhere else that there's public space, there are homeless camps throughout Washington, D.C. I don't even know if people realize that, by the way.
No, but it's happening everywhere.
Because, and this is the dynamic that I was just talking about, because people are getting kicked out of D.C. There's so much, so many of these new policies are coming in, so people can't afford the houses that they lived in 40, 50 years. And rather than, you know, take a new place or move, they're saying, fine, I'm just going to pop a tent.
Right. I hear it's happening in cities all over the country. Not just D.C., not just L.A., but I hear cities in even red states and
stuff.
Right.
So L.A., the last time I was there, I said, this is like a year ago. And I wanted to take Tanya to this. There's this one boutique that she really likes, and she likes their dresses and their designer. So I said, let's see if they're open. And they were actually closed on Sundays, but I had actually set up like a special thing for her. But I said, we'll look in the window. So we're walking down and I say, and everywhere. It's tents and homeless. Tents and homeless. I said, are we in Skid Row? And I'm like, because I'm not an LA guy, right? And I text my buddy. I said, am I in Skid Row? And he said, you don't understand, Jack. Like, there is no Skid Row anymore, right?
It's Skid City.
It's the city, the yeah. whole city now. Like, you can't. And then we actually were talking to the boutique owner, and she was like, we have to leave the city. Like, we can't even open up anymore.
You know what, man? It's really interesting. YouTube rolled out this thing called Super Thanks.
Super Thanks.
Super Thanks. And I got a notification saying, congratulations, you have been accepted to Super Thanks. And I'm like, what is it? It's basically people can comment on
the
videos.
I have so many jokes that I can't say right now.
But it's like Super Chat.
Yeah.
But for,
so what's the difference between Super Chat
live
and Super Thanks?
Live and not live.
Okay.
So if I put up a video that's not live, someone can basically pay to have their comment appear high above in,
oh,
in the comments.
Okay. So like if you're doing like a daily thing.
I was thinking about this and I was like, so people are getting money from the government, and then they're choosing to give it to people who make videos on the internet. Is this the future of the economy? Is this what they're going for? Like some kind of government-funded attention economy for the sake of an economy? Like, well, you got to do something, I guess.
We have to distract the people somehow.
Well, look at Reddit. You get awards. Like, not you don't get paid for it, just giving Reddit money. But it's so weird. Someone will post something on Reddit, and they'll be like, today my dog farted. And then it'll have, like, $3,000 in awards. And I'm like, what are you spending this money on? I feel like we're heading in this direction where there's a lot of human psychology
behind that, by the way.
Oh, for sure.
There's a ton.
No, I just think, you know, I remember Greta Thunberg. She was like, these fairy tales about infinite economic growth. And I'm like, do you see what's happening with the digital economy? And
your Greta is better than your Obama.
My Greta. Well, I'll actually do Obama at some point, but
I'm not trying
to do a good Greta, mind you. I'm trying to be somewhat of a jerk in the way I impersonate her. But,
I thought if I was listening right now, I almost thought that she walked into the room.
Oh yeah,
just
yeah,
then.
Yeah,
I was like, Tim, Greta, why are you wearing a beanie?
We in order to have a functioning economy while reducing greenhouse emissions and if you want a great reset, then people will own things. But what are they going to own? They're going to own like the forest leather boots of agility with like +3 agility and they're enchanted for +10 armor or whatever. I'm sorry, that's an armor kit, not an enchantment. They're going to have digital products and video games, and they're going to be proud of their non-physical assets that they can brag about. They're going to play video games all day, and they're going to do very little work. Now, part of me says this transition kind of needs to happen to a certain degree, because what happens to all the McDonald's fast food workers? You know, they lose their jobs. It feels very much so like the establishment elites.
We are 10 years away from McDonald's being fully automated.
You're right. And I think we're a month away from McDonald's going full kiosks.
Yeah.
Because no one's working anymore. So it's about time. I mentioned that Wendy's where they're like, please come work here. Guys, kiosks now. And instead of being like, oh, no one will work here. Just put up a kiosk.
There's a, and I gotta say this just because it's where we're going, right? My heart, everybody knows I'm a longtime supporter of the Wawa Nation. Love my Wawa. You know, Sheetz, okay, whatever. But Wawa, that's my heart. That's my heart. There is a Wawa that just opened, or it's going to be open, I think, in northern New Jersey, where there's no inside, right? So it's just out. You drive up to a kiosk, or you have your app, and then you tell them what you want, and then you drive up to the drive-thru, and a hand hands it to you, and then you drive off. And that's it.
That's the future, man.
That's the future, right there.
I was just watching Stargate SG-1. The episode where they go to that planet with the dome. That's the atmosphere is destroyed. Everyone's got the link in their brain. All right.
I actually remember that. Yeah.
Yes. It was just on today. For those that don't know what Stargate SG-1 is, don't worry. I'm going to explain the concept to you. Basically, all of these people live in a dying society. They were in a city that used to have 100,000 people, and there is an atmospheric dome that keeps them safe from pollutants outside. They wear something called a link.
Wasn't the dome like failing or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they wear something called a link, which connects their brains to the internet. And they know everything because the link just downloads information. But what they didn't know was that it was also erasing information.
Right.
So what was happening was the city was failing, their shield was failing, and toxic atmosphere was basically getting closer and closer. But every time it would shrink and somebody would die, the link would erase their memory of what had happened.
It doesn't sound like anything that's going on right now.
Not
even close.
Not necessarily, but I bring it up just because, you know, of where we're moving with digital economy, the way we're moving to that Black Mirror episode where nobody leaves their room. You know that Black Mirror episode where their room has TV screens and they watch American Idol, but their character is in the audience instead of them?
Right.
All of these dystopian ideas.
WWE is doing now.
But your image appears in the audience from like a TV screen?
Yeah, you haven't seen that?
No.
Yeah, that's real. Oh, so instead of the crowd, it's like a Zoom crowd. And everyone,
that's literally the Black Mirror episode.
And it's live, right? So it's a live image of that. It was either them or UFC or
something. Charlie Booker was his name? Was the guy who did that?
What's
the
guy? I think so. And then
pathetic.
And then you're in the crowd, and it's your live reaction to what's going on, but you're not actually there. And the performers can't actually see that, right? That's all green screened in.
Say the line, Jack. The one you tweet all the time. You know what I'm talking about. Do you know which one?
Which one? I say
get
a lot.
Get out of the cities.
Get out of cities. Get out of cities.
Yeah, you tweet that one a lot.
Well, that's usually for crime. That's usually for like, dude, you know, someone has blown up something or someone's going crazy. And
we got chickens in the incubator.
Get out of cities. But it's actually, honestly, like, seriously, for folks, if you there's that book, right? There's that talks about, like,
Escape,
you know,
from the City.
Yeah, Escape from the City. And if you have no idea how to live outside of a city, if you've been living out of convenience stores and Starbucks and fast food and restaurants your entire life, and you have no clue how to, like, just have a house, right, and run it and grow your own food and have a couple of animals or something, like, there's a few books out there that actually, and you can go as far as you want, right? But they're actually pretty good.
We're trying to get the chickens to brood. Mm-hmm. Because we're getting 4 eggs per day now, and the chickens just leave them. And I'm like, okay, so we actually were at a point where one chicken had like 6 or 7 eggs, didn't care. And I'm like, if you want to raise chickens, man, it's not that easy.
Maybe they're still a little uncomfortable, like I am in this chair.
Oh, man, bit. You know, yeah, it can get a little rough, you know. Our chairs are, you know, missing that special something.
You took, like, the cushions out of it or something?
Well, people didn't, they were not that great at cushions, I guess. People didn't like them, whatever. But anyway, you know, farming and taking care of yourself, it's not easy. And so I think we're, you know, this nightmare dystopia stuff, either people fall in line and live these really awful cubicle lives where they get out, but that means you move to the suburbs, you move to the rural
Escape
areas.
Escape the cube farms.
You got to learn how
to
take care of yourself.
Well, so this is a point I was going to make earlier when you were talking about the worker shortage that's going on right now, because I think that, you know, we were talking a little bit more about your sort of like entry-level jobs or your service economy type jobs, but what I think there's also another layer to all of this that not a lot of people are talking about, is that a lot of people just had a year off, right?
Yeah.
Or a year where they were kind of working from home. So a year off.
One guy for CNN was taking care of business.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
On camera.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, he was working hard. Working hard.
Tubing.
No. Yep. He was, again, a lot of jokes
working
that I could.
Hard.
Yeah, a lot of jokes that would get me.
Anyway, continue.
Just going through my material. Let's see if we can cancel first. And I think, though, I really do think there were a lot of people who had that year off from their lives, and it was almost like they had a year to kind of check into their lives, in a sense, right? A year off from their work life, but able to check into their personal life and say, you know what? If I'm driving an hour commute to work, that's 2 hours a day, plus I'm working in a cubicle for 8 hours a day, that's 10 hours of my day where I'm not with my personal life, my family, what's going on. That's the majority of my day, right? And, you know, and then you're sleeping however many hours, or you're not sleeping enough, because, even though you should be. And you thought I was going to do a MyPillow plug there. I think there's probably a lot of people who looked at that and said, you know what, I want to make a change. You know,
absolutely.
Why am I doing this? Why am I living this way?
Well,
for some company that would just replace me if I dropped dead tomorrow.
Absolutely. The World Economic Forum proudly put up a video saying a Microsoft survey found 30,000 people found 41% were planning on quitting their jobs or changing careers.
That's great. I think that's great. I actually think that's great. I think that's healthy.
I not so much. Not so much.
What do you think?
It's 50-50. Let me ask you a question, Jack. How many people do you know play guitar?
I know a lot of people play guitar.
How many people do you know of those who play the guitar? How many of them are good at playing guitar?
Handful.
So what, you know, like five,
half a dozen.
And how many people do you know who play guitar? Like, could you? So we get a good sense of the ratio.
God, maybe like 40, 50.
40 or 50 people, and about, would you say, half a dozen?
Half a dozen
are good at playing. Okay, of the people who aren't good, how many of them do you think would quit their job if they had money from the government to try and make careers playing guitar? A lot of them, right?
Probably a lot of them, yeah.
So, you know, I had a
friend, I'm a creator.
Right. I had a friend who was like,
and Matt, by the way, if you are in any place and you're calling an actual musician a creator, like, just leave. Like,
so
just
I,
go
I,
out.
I was arguing about UBI And my friend was like, if people are getting a universal basic income, it'll be like ancient Rome, man. People will be free to explore.
Well, this is in the Expanse as well, by the way, right?
Right.
You know that, right?
No, what is it?
They get into it in the books more than the TV series of The Expanse, but there actually is a UBI on Earth in The Expanse.
Well, so,
and I think I see where you're going.
Well, so what I said was, this is the line I use exactly to debunk the idea that UBI creates this utopia.
Right.
I was like, if everybody was given the opportunity just to pursue passion, I asked them, how many people do you know play the guitar? How many of them are bad at guitar?
Right.
How many of those people would try to become rock stars if they had money sitting around? The problem is not everybody is actually good at what they want to do. So you got to find out what you are good at and make the best of it.
Yeah, this actually is. So it kind of runs into a lot of the pop psychology that's out there of, like, you know, follow your dreams.
Mike Rowe says don't follow your dreams.
Does he actually say that?
I'm pretty sure Mike Rowe said don't. He said, or something like, don't follow your passions.
Find your passion, right? Find your passion.
He said something like follow your talent.
Is like the big, exactly. Find your talent, follow your talent.
Right.
That is where, like, my brother and I, right? Great, just perfect example. He is straight up natural athlete. Like, he's the kind of guy where you can give him a sport, whatever it is, literally whatever sport, within 10 minutes, he's got it down. Like, he can play at a basic level. And if he puts more time into it, like, he'll be an all-star. Like, he just, like, for me, like, I could practice and I can train and I can get to, like, an average level, but he just has that the natural genetics and everything else to just be amazing at anything he does when it comes to that. Whereas, like, for me, like, okay, I could spend all this time practicing, but I'm not going to get to that level.
You might like playing football, but you're not good enough to be a pro.
Right.
Some people try. And so this idea of UBI,
I think, like, the average person wouldn't even last, like, a single down in an actual football game.
Let me tell you something. You know what happened during the lockdown? You'd go to Best Buy. And so we're doing the show. We need equipment, right? We have a show with a million subscribers on one channel. And I go to Best Buy, like, we need to pick up some Stream Decks. And this is the switcher we use for the cameras.
Right.
They're sold out. And I said, okay, well, do you have any capture cards? We're sold out. Why? Because everyone decided they wanted to be a streamer.
Yeah.
Now that, you know what really, really annoys the crap out of me is pop career, right? Is the idea of, like, oh man, it was like when I was a kid, it was like, I want to be a rock star. I'm like, no, you don't. You want to be famous and you want easy money.
Right.
You don't want to work and you don't want to do anything, but these are some of the hardest jobs. I've had so many people in my life. I had one person hit me up years ago, like, I really want to do what you do and report and make these videos. And I said, I'll tell you what, come hang out in New York, hang out with my friends, we'll get you set up. And then within a week, they were like, man, this sucks. I don't want to do this. This is hard. Oh, what did you want? I just wanted to, like, travel. You know what they do now? They bought a van and they drive around in it.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, you didn't want to do the hard work of reporting from conflict zones. You just wanted to, like, sit in front of a lake.
Right.
Well, go ahead and do it. Get your van and go live down by the river. Hey, man, no beef. But everybody just wants free money. That's what they really want. They don't want to work. Have you ever seen that subreddit?
I'm all for downsizing if people are into that.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I think that's amazing. That I know that's, like, a new trend that's going on, and I think that people are using this sort of, like, digital nomadism combined with just, hey, let's buy an RV and just live wherever we want to live, right?
That's great.
And I
that's great.
Totally support that.
Yeah. Have you seen the subreddit anti-work?
No.
What's it's that? Literally a popular subreddit. It's because, you know, I gotta tell you,
I haven't been going on Reddit as much. My Reddit hours are down.
We are raising generation after generation of lazy, entitled people. So I don't want to work. Work is wrong. Work is bad. Work is awesome. Work is great. I go out every day. I wake up in the morning and I do my I read the news. I'm reading the news nonstop.
Right.
After I record my first segment in the morning, you know what I do? I go right to the chicken coop. I let the chickens out. I make sure I spray down Lola. Chickens are dirty birds. And then I check for the eggs. And then I go to the garden. And the garden we're basically decommissioning because we're going to be cementing it over and moving it. But I'll take whatever vegetables we have left, which is basically a little bit of cherry tomatoes. I do work. And that way I can have breakfast. I can have good, healthy breakfast. Work is fun. There's a lot of people who are like, work sucks, because they view work as like a menial minimum wage job. But your work is supposed to be something that you are passionate about to an extent. I say, you know, to an extent in that you should feel accomplished in solving problems. You should feel accomplished in getting something done.
So
you may not be able to follow your passion, but every job I've had, there's got to be a goal-oriented accomplishment. And I think a lot of businesses probably suck at doing that. But this idea that people are they think work shouldn't exist, I'll tell you what. I've got an opportunity for you. There's two options if you don't want to work. The first, beautiful beaches, coconuts as far as the eye can see, an uninhabited island in the Caribbean. We'll put you there and you can not work all day and nights. See how it works out for you. And if that doesn't work out for you, I'll tell you what. I got a place we can bring you. That's, you're going to get three hot meals per day. You're going to have a nice little room all to yourself. No cost. Medical expenses all taken care of. And it's called prison.
Yep.
Yeah. How's your back?
I got this. So I don't know if you could see, but I brought this. I found this pillow just now. Totally.
Just now, huh?
That was here, and now I've got
you bring the competition into my house.
I've got the lumbar support
the competition
that I always needed. This delightful and affordable MyPillow available.
You see, ladies and gentlemen,
from MyPillow.com with promo code POSO. Oh.
You see, in this house we have the communist Our Pillow,
which I see you aren't even using.
Well, it's for everybody, so I can't claim it.
Oh, right, because it's not yours. It is ours.
It's ours.
It is ours. The cats and are under the guard, aren't they? He's laughing because they are.
You know what's funny is that I genuinely thought that David Hogg's pillow company was going to be called Our Pillow because he kept saying Our Pillow.
Yeah, he did keep saying that.
But he meant it literally in the sense of, like, his pillow company, like him and his friend. When he said Our, he was referring to them.
What did they end up calling it?
Good Pillow.
Good.
And then nothing happened. Nothing happened.
He kept saying he wanted to find like a socialist factory or something. And it didn't exist. And then he was saying, I just want to get a socialist pro-union factory. Why is it so hard to do in the
America.
United States of America? And then he couldn't figure it out.
Because you voted for the Democrats.
And meanwhile, Mike Lindell's over there just kind of like, hey, our pillows are still available. You can buy them right now.
He's like, we got the sheets made from Giza, Egypt, and they're the best. I bought a bunch of towels recently because we need towels for the house for, like, you know, guests and stuff. So, I bought a bunch of towels and promo code POSO.
Yeah, boy.
Super cheap.
I think it was a $49.99 for the set.
Cheap is the wrong word. Inexpensive.
Inexpensive, yeah.
Very comfortable.
I actually posted a promo code for the just for the towels the other day. No, it was the sheets. It was for the sheets this morning. I think they're both going for $49.
The sheets.
Yeah, check it out because I don't want to get screwed up on that. But somebody actually said, they're like, are you sure that's right? Because I think that's too low. And I'm like, they send me the numbers to post, right? I just posted.
So you know the Freedom Phone?
Sure.
Right? You have a promo code with them, right?
I do, yeah.
You're doing
I saw you had Eric on the other night.
We had him on. And one of the big criticisms is that the Freedom Phone...
Oh, he got lit up.
I know, it's hilarious.
He got lit up when that came out.
For those that aren't familiar, the Freedom Phone is... This guy made a phone company that has a bunch of censored apps on it. And the goal is to make it uncensorable. What that really means is it's a more free speech oriented phone. The services on it will, he says, not censor.
Which,
you.
By the way, guys, you know, I mean, Eric doesn't. This isn't a money grab, right? He does not need to do this.
But they complained that it was a Chinese phone, and they were all laughing like, "Oh, it's just a Chinese phone."
You mean like all phones?
What's he supposed to do? Is he supposed to start a phone factory in America? I mean, he could.
I think he actually was able to find one in Hong Kong.
He said he found one in Hong Kong. That wasn't mainland.
And then
he mentioned there's another factory, and I was like, he was like, we have Umidigi in Hong Kong, and there's another factory that does the surplus orders. Like, what's it called? And he's like, I can't say the name. And I was like, why not? And he's like, it's an Asian word. I can't say it. And I was like, oh, you literally can't say the name.
Oh, like
not
I...
Not that he was restricted from saying it.
Oh, he should have called me.
Well, he said he's going to put it up so everyone can see what it is, because he's not trying to like hide it. He's just like, can't say it.
Yeah.
But anyway... It was funny to see the media complaining.
What's funny, because Umiji, that's not a Chinese word. I don't know what that is.
No. Well, it's a corporate word.
It actually sounds more Korean.
They complain that his phone, they mock him for having a Chinese phone. What do these people think is happening?
As they type on their Googles and their Androids.
Right. Everything is. These factories don't exist in this country.
Lenovo.
And so you get David Hogg, and he's like, we're going to make a good pillow. It's going to be called Good Pillow, and we're going to find a good, strong American factory with a good union. And I'm like, good luck, dude.
I was trying. So I did the graphic novel a couple of years ago. We did the Agent Poso graphic novel, and we wanted to do, it was great. We did three figures with it. It was awesome. Ton of support. Actually, there's a Comic Con going on right now in it's going to be next week in Temple, Texas, and I can't go, which sucks. There are like 27,000 people coming because we've now signed with Iconic Comics.
Oh,
and
cool.
So they're running it. So like they put Agent Poso for all the press who has to go. So all, and this is like mainstream, like video game and comic press are all going, and all the press badges have the Agent Poso as the logo.
Way.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they have like 300 press badges and it's all Agent Poso on it. It's awesome.
That's
great. But I can't go because I'm booked for, it's actually my cousin's wedding on like the same day, and I literally can't go and I'm so bummed. But it's going to be very trolling. But to go back, one of the pieces of merch that I wanted to have with this whole thing was I said, hey, let's do like, remember the old G.I. Joes, like the really old ones that didn't have like the articulated arms. It was just, or the elbows and everything. It was just like the old Star Wars figures. Like it was just
like one solid piece.
Like it's like one solid piece and then the arms and legs would move and
right.
That's it. So I was like, there's gotta be a company out there that does like retro action figures, right? And I want to get like a retro action figure Agent Poso, like do one of me. And then like my wife was in it. My son was in it. And I could, and I told everybody beforehand, I said, I don't want any of this stuff made in China. I want all this stuff made in the USA, right? Don't, you know, I don't want to be like, there was another conservative who was doing an apparel line that, you know, ended up getting made in China and she got in a lot of trouble with that. And I was like, I don't want to be her. So they were like, dude, and my business partner came back to me and was like, dude, you're not getting an action figure made in the United States.
Right.
And I was like, that's BS, man. I'm going to find one. I spent like 2 weeks trying to find any action figure, because you'd think that there'd be a huge market for like 80s action figures, retro. Hey, like, let me 3D print one of like me and my buddies and little action figures. Nothing. Doesn't exist.
You know what you
All
could?
China.
I bet you could easily hire a bad guitar player for to come and serenade you, though.
Precisely.
Yeah,
easily.
The people.
So, by the way, if anyone out there is handy with the 3D printing and, you know, can do that at scale, you know, economically, hit me up because I'd still do it.
So it sounds like I should just buy one?
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like America is in this illusory state. People seem to think that it's still this, you know, was it the shining city on the hill? We don't have factories anymore. We don't have jobs anymore. We don't make stuff anymore.
You know, and
we complain a lot.
When you talk about America standing on the international stage with all the controversy about the Olympics and the Olympic team right now, and not even to get into any one of the specifics, but you look at, when I was a kid, we had the Dream Team. You remember that, 1992?
Yeah.
That was the first year they allowed professionals to play on the Olympic team. Because I think the U.S. had gotten spanked by the Soviets the year before or 2 years before or something. And they were like, all right, the Olympics before, because it's the Soviet Union then. And they said, all right, we're going to allow professionals. And then you had like Jordan and Scottie Pippen and Charles Barkley.
Yep.
And Karl Malone, Patrick Ewing, et cetera, like they're all, Larry Bird, and they're all there on one team, right? And they just dominate. They're the most dominant team ever put together, right? But then you look at, Magic Johnson was on the team, and then you go and you just look at the caliber of like Olympic athletes, and it's just kind of,
it's get woke, go broke, man.
In our standing in the work, and this woke stuff doesn't fly on the international stage. So here in the United States, you have to kind of make this performative, you know, agreement, this adherence. Logan Paul, of course, he bends the knee to, you know, Kendiism, CRTism. And you sort of have to, it's like in China where you have to say, oh yeah, I support the CCP, whether you do or not,
right?
You have to say it because that is your theory of the state. Well, the theory of our state now has almost become, so it used to be that, I can remember within living memory that if somebody botched, I think it was Lady Gaga, like botched the national anthem at something, and she was ridiculed for it.
Right.
I mean, it was a huge deal. Now it's considered positive and laudatory to ridicule the national anthem and to protest it.
Well,
right?
let's talk.
On the international stage, you can see the decline of America as a nation.
Simone Biles.
I mean, so I don't know Simone Biles. I don't know her story. I'm sure she has one. I'm a Catholic. I pray for her the same way I pray for everybody else. I think she actually is Catholic. I might be wrong about that, but I think she is. And
she dropped out. Well, I think she
issue,
got pulled out.
The issue for me, did she pull or did she get dropped?
She took herself out.
Yeah.
I thought she took herself out.
And now she's out completely,
I guess. And so
the
issue for me, though, is why is it as a society now, I'm told, right? Right. And I pray for her. I pray for Simone Biles. But at the same time, I'm not going to go to my son and say that you should make your role model.
She's a Catholic.
She is Catholic. Right. Yeah. I thought I was right about that. I think she wore a miraculous medal at one point. That's how I knew. And my brother posted something. And I'm not going to go to my son and say, hey, let's celebrate someone for not accomplishing.
that's where we've been going for a long time with the honor roll mention, the participation trophies, that kind of thing. So Simone Biles, man, she's best of the best. I mean, she's incredible. She landed, in qualifier. They got mad because she did that double Yurochenko, whatever it was called. I'm not a gymnastics person.
Well, the idea was that she had surpassed the previous skill level, and they didn't even have a skill level for the feat that she attempted.
So
and
she wouldn't gain. She would get her name in the book for like a maneuver or whatever. And so she's doing really, really well. But she flubbed a few moves. Then, because of her mental health, pulled out. That is an indication of the failure of our culture, that you would have an Olympic athlete having those mental issues, like not getting. I mean, proper training isn't just your body; it's your mind and your body. And so, a breakdown of an athlete is a failure across the board.
It's right. I mean, I take this as an indictment of the entire social strata.
Yeah.
That put her into that position, that puts us all into this position.
And then we celebrate it.
Right. You look at the response of the actual story here isn't Simone Biles. The actual story is that if you were a journalist in sports today and you said something that went against the grain and said that you disagreed with that decision or that you don't celebrate what happened, you would lose your job.
You know what I'm
saying?
You would
lose your job in America today.
I'm sick of the hive mind, man. You know,
if you went against the hive, you're done.
Charlie Kirk, he was recording his podcast, and he said that Simone Biles gave a gift or something to the Russians, something like that. And then I think
the Russians got the gold medal, I believe. Right.
And then I see a bunch of these posts where everyone's like, Charlie's so dumb, like Phil DeFranco comes out and like, Charlie's a dick. And I'm like, shut up, dude. Phil, listen, you don't know anything about Charlie, okay? He's a guy with an opinion. All this is people with no opinions who don't actually care and have any thoughts of their own wading into stupid drama. Let me tell you something. If somebody wants to opine on Simone Biles, who is like the cream of the crop, the best of the best in the Olympics, and she bails out for mental health issues, and they have a negative view of that, I say, interesting. Am I going to make a video where I'm like, oh, that Charlie Kirk, who cares? Charlie Kirk's a commentator. Opining on opinions is the stupidest thing ever. But out of the woodwork comes every stupid person who's like, I've got nothing better to say, but then to just rag on a guy who had an opinion about a thing, which is totally irrelevant to the Olympics and the conversation.
Right, but that hive mind provoked response is actually quite useful for us because it is revealing to us in its response to defend itself. We are seeing the contours of the hive mind in and of itself.
I despise NPCs. It's just, you know, the conformists who don't read, who don't learn, who don't think, who just say, tell me what to do. I've never been in favor of that. I grew up when I was younger. I wouldn't say that I was like, you know, the punks get mad when I'm like, oh, I listen to punk music. No, you didn't name a band. And I'm like, shut up, name a band. The Virus or whatever. Hanging out with a bunch of people who played a bunch of crazy punk music. And the main thing was we were anti-establishment. We were skateboarders. We were running from cops and security guards. And we said, the system is broken. We don't care. And your rules are stupid. Screw your conformity. And now what we have are these people on the left who still think they're punk rock.
Right.
They're as anti-punk rock as you can get. Charlie Kirk is trending on Twitter. And I look at it, I'm like, why? Why do these people care about Charlie Kirk? They don't. What they care about is virtue signaling, letting everybody know, I'm cool, I'm part of the tribe too, so I'm going to talk about this guy that's not relevant to the Olympics. It's a waste of my time. If I want to bring up something about Simone Biles, I don't even think I'm relevant to the conversation. If people want to listen to what I have to say about it, they can, but she's the center focus of this. I think it's really bad that we're celebrating. There was like a news article where it's like...
Why is it in today's society we want to celebrate mental health as if that is something in itself which should be celebrated rather than achievement for achievement's sake?
Because we are losing our mental health. It used to be that we had our mental health. We were resilient. We were mature. We could deal with crises and hardship, and we could do it with a straight face.
Right. The opposite of mental disorder is mental resilience.
You were in the Navy. You were in a submarine, right?
I would spend some time on a sub. Yeah.
Have you ever been on a naval vessel during a crisis?
Training and well, yeah, I guess you could say. I've been in some heightened situations on a naval vessel.
You ever see a general just start like breaking down, saying, "I'm gonna leave the battle because of my mental health." this is not something I can be dealing with right now. And they're like, that's honorable, general. Good for you.
Well, you know, I see that on Twitter every day now with these generals.
Oh, yeah, I know. Mark Milley, man. That guy lost his mind.
Mark Milley, this guy, Pat Donahoe, who said, you're being a shill for Putin if you say he, by the way, private, you know, set his account to private today.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
But these guys can't handle a Twitter war. How could they actually ever handle a real war?
Could you imagine taking one of these...
I think I said this last time I was on here, but I do this to make a point. The U.S. Navy would not be prepared to defend Taiwan in a scenario if China wanted to take it tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right?
They would lose. They would lose, and imagine what that would do to the American psyche overnight to lose in a state-on-state conflict like that, a near-peer competitor.
They'd cheer for
it. You'd have half the country, cheering for it, but think of the American right and think of the conservative Americans and even think of like a lot of just sort of the, you know, kind of normie Americans out there. You're sort of like, hey, I'm just kind of going through life and doing my thing. America's the best, et cetera, right? When you're told you are not the best and you understand that your system is not.
No, I think the average person won't care. I think the average Democrat will be like, hey, it's none of our business. Good for China. And they would cheer it on. And they would say, you know, it's actually a good thing that China has reclaimed Taiwan because, you know, we shouldn't be meddling in their affairs. All of a sudden becoming anti-war in that regard. You would see regular people.
And let me be clear. I don't want to go to war with China.
No, I know.
I really don't.
But you would see regular people say, oh, I've had too many conversations with regular people when I lived in New York. You know, people who don't pay attention to politics. What I mean by regular people. Politically uninitiated. And I'll be like, so that Obama, yeah, one of the first things he did when he got into office was he bombed a Pakistani village, killing like 23 women and children. And they go, oh. I'm like, do you care? No.
Well, here's the difference, right? Here's what I think is different, is that it's not about, to the average American, it wouldn't be about Taiwan. It would be about America clearly and definitively losing a war.
Yeah, but...
Which is something that...
If China goes...
You know, you look at a lot of wars, like 1812, did the U.S. really win that? You know, not so much.
Well, everybody claims.
You know, they claim the U.S. has never lost a war, but how tenable is that at this point, right?
Regular people... Here's what I think would happen. China will move to take Taiwan. They'll go from the air. They'll take out the any opposition on the ground. They'll beach the island, and they'll take it over, and it'll be big breaking news. And then the left will claim to have some expertise. All these stupid Twitter people who don't actually read and see Facebook memes will be like, well, here's what I think about Taiwan. I don't care what you think about Taiwan. And then regular people are going to be like, huh. And then something will happen. Their computers will double in cost or triple in cost or just become unavailable
because
completely.
Because what does Taiwan have?
Chips.
All your microchips, your semiconductors, your transistors, that entire industry. Right. And by the way, I wish this wasn't the situation. I wish that a lot of that was onshored to the United States. But again, by policy, since the 1990s, we've been offshoring all this stuff. San Diego, by the way, San Diego was the birthplace of this industry, and all of it was shipped overseas to Taiwan and Korea.
Yep.
Right. All of this was
this country
was
has been extracted. Dylan Radigan said it a long time ago, maybe not in the same context, but a similar context. The country has been extracted. You know what I think happened? I think 2008 was a wake-up call for a lot of people, a lot of Democrats. You know, look, you look at Bernie Sanders in 2008, and he's like, we need a border barrier. Open borders are a bad thing. You see Hillary Clinton and Pelosi and Biden. They're all like, we must build a border barrier. Illegal immigration is bad. And then the economic collapse happened, and they said, well, we just hit an iceberg. I'm going to try and steal as much silverware as possible before I get on a life raft.
Right. And so the idea of the Obama administration, and they're quite open about this, if you actually look at what the national security advisors and the deputy national security advisors, Ben Rhodes, et cetera, have actually said in their own writings. They said, since the United States is in what we're putting it into is a managed decline, right? We know that we are going to need help from our peers in other regions of the world to be able to enforce things. So why should we be the ones who are enforcing international norms and international laws? Maybe China can help us out. Maybe we can pass off some of this responsibility to China when it comes to the Asia.
There's a life raft for everybody, in my opinion. And I'm not going to tell you what to do with your money. Take financial advice from somebody else, but I think it's Bitcoin.
Right. So again, we've been put on this path by policy, right? That's clear. We don't have to be on it, right? We can get off of it. We can right the ship. You know, this has all gone on within the last 30 years. That's not that much time, right? We can actually make these decisions. However, people need to understand that there are massive economic interests in between us righting the ship or staying on this path towards managed decline and serfdom and the rise of a new peasant slave class of the underlings, right? The under society, right? So you have an over society that's pushing for all these things to happen. They are stateless. They are multinational. They're tied in with the CCP. They're tied in with everything else. And they want you to be the consumer, right? Your job is to consume. You are, like, if you watch WALL-E, right? You know, you're right. You're the guy who's sitting there and you're in your chair and you don't even have a MyPillow and you're hooked up to the machine and you're tweeting. And there's actually this great, that's why they don't talk about WALL-E that much anymore, because I think it was too real. And a lot of Christian symbolism Eve. In there. Eve, and it's like an arc, right, of humanity. Where there's this joke as Wally's going around, everyone's in a blue suit, but he turns them into red when they become activated. And then there's this running gag of like, wait, we have a pool? Right. Yeah. And they kind of realize, so their screens go off and they realize instead of just trending and they're just commenting, it's Facebook, right? So they're all just commenting on like the minutiae of day to day life, and
they have no bones.
They have no bones. Then, and they have like slushies that are, you know, ordered to their cart whenever they need it. And then suddenly they start realizing like, hey, we're in outer space. Like, this is pretty cool. And we have a pool. We're on a nice ship. We can to each other.
You know why I don't think WALL-E would happen? In one aspect, that everyone being...
We'd never be able to make a ship that works?
No. There's a physiological addiction to athletics, you know, to sports and to exercise. So while certainly a lot of people get addicted...
Well, for some people, maybe.
For sure. But there, the idea that every single person would be overweight just floating around in chairs, there's a lot of people who would... get that hit, that dopamine, that runner's high. And
maybe
so,
those people refuse to get on the ship.
Yeah, I guess. No, we'll just die here on Earth or something.
We're just going to die here with the trash piles, man.
The trash piles.
You're not going to take us out.
You know what? Let me tell you. I think...
graphene.
I think...
First we get to graphene, okay?
Is that how you think Ian sounds?
I don't know. I'm just kind of doing a character at that point.
He's like, dude, graphene.
He's not that bad. Yeah.
He's probably watching. He's like, Jack! Yeah. I don't sound like that. You know what, man? You know, here's my prediction. I've been saying this for a while. Vaccines will be mandatory, in my opinion. It's going to be like this.
I think everyone knows that's coming from the military, right?
No, like, no. I'm saying forever.
I'm not even like breaking news.
I'm saying everyone. You know why? Here's what will happen. In maybe 20 years, you'll go to the DMV. You're getting your license updated or whatever, or you're getting your ID for the first time, and they'll go, "I need a birth certificate, Social Security card. I need your vaccination card and a bill with your address on it." And they'll go, "Oh, yep, I got it all right here." And they'll go, "Okay," and then they'll type it. I'm like, "Here's your ID." It'll be a part of the process like normal. Like we saw with that photo of the airport. Is that a real photo? You see that where it's like in
Canada? That was my buddy John Dutois, who worked on a ton of film projects together. And he said it wasn't his photo, but someone had sent it to him. He's Canadian.
So I haven't fact-checked it, but it shows airport lines. He said that's
it was a separate airport line coming into Canada. So a Canadian customs line. One for vaccinated, one for unvaccinated.
Yeah, de Blasio said the voluntary phase is over.
I mean, this reminds me of Gattaca. Remember the valids and the invalids?
Oh, I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
Oh, that's everything.
But I bring this up because to paint a picture of this future where Americans don't make stuff. Americans are like WALL-E, but you know, not like floating around in hover chairs. We don't have hover chairs. But they're mostly going to do nothing. They're becoming more and more obese. They don't work. They get free money from the government. It is a managed decline. Giving people this money...
You know, Tesla said this in the 1920s.
What, managed decline?
No, he said that we will reach a point with materialism where the average person lives as if they're in a bee colony. He predicted bugmen.
I think the unemployment benefits are them lowering down people into economic collapse. They're trying to hold you back from you know, going nuts as the economy implodes. While they shuffle off overseas their assets and resources.
Oh, yeah.
And they buy a Bitcoin and things like that. And then you're sitting here going like, well, I'm getting my money. And then one day, rug gets pulled out from under you and you are a serf. That's where I think we're going.
You were talking about the chickens, but everybody needs to pay attention. Where are your eggs? Right? What basket do you have your eggs in? Right? We talk about our nest egg. We talk about all these different things that we have planned for us, right? Start thinking about that now, right? Start thinking about that in your 20s. Max out your 20s as much as possible. Absolute as much as possible. Whenever someone comes to me, and I just did I was at the Turning Point, the student event they had in Tampa, and, you know, with all the controversy, Brandy, and people would come up, they said, you know, what advice would you give if we're just getting started, you know, and these are like high school kids saying this, and I say, just max out. Just you are in right now. You are at the time of your life. Do not rest in. Don't keep it in neutral. Right. You need to be pedal to the metal through your teenage years, through your 20s, and then figure out where you're going to go. Right. So that by the time you're in your 30s, you're just grinding. Right. Your 30s should all be about just grinding, and then at that point you can start to slow down.
You ever do you follow do you use Instagram a bit?
Yeah.
Do you
I'm on the gram.
Do you like adventure content, hiking, travel stuff at all?
Sure.
So I there's like three kinds of videos that I watch. There's three kinds of things recommended to me. Typically political comics, mostly adventure content.
Hiking, oh, you mean like when you hit the search thing, yeah.
And action sports, scootering, blading, snowboarding, skateboarding. Nice. And you know what I'm just so sick of? Avicii, The Nights. You ever hear that song?
No.
Go on Instagram. Search for
But I like, probably have. I just don't know the name of have. It. Yeah.
If you get recommended these videos, the reels of like...
Yeah,
like,
in reels. Yeah.
Hiking and skydiving and parachuting, I swear like... What's it like? 9 out of 10 videos uses that song. And it's just so corny. But you know what? It really bums me out because it shows you like just how generic everyone is.
Right.
They're like... Everybody thinks they're this beautiful, unique snowflake, and you know the phrase snowflake. You know where it comes from? Fight Club. That's the line. We all thought we were these beautiful. Our parents said we were unique snowflakes. We're not.
Right.
You thought you were going to be a rock star. You're not. These people make these videos that are all just so generic, and man, is it depressing to see everybody just cranking out generic same old stuff. We don't make stuff anymore, man.
That's what NPCs is, right?
I'm going to make stuff. I got a 3D printer.
It's not creative.
We're going to make weird stuff.
It is more it's like every movie now is stuck in like rerun mode. Like every time I go to watch a movie, I feel like I've seen this. We went to see the new, M. Night Shyamalan movie. Where they're on the beach. What's it called? Old. And it just like.
It was awful.
It actually wasn't that bad. I'd give it a B. But,
okay. Hey, I'm surprised.
But and I hated Glass, his last one. I absolutely hated that.
I like that one.
I didn't like it at all. I felt it ruined the legacy of Unbroken.
I liked it.
Or Unbreakable. And
yeah. Unbreakable was good though.
It's the best superhero movie ever made.
Right.
The only thing with the film, though, is like I just felt like I'd seen it before. Like I felt it was like going through the motions, and it was like
predictable.
Yeah, you kind of know going into it that hey, it's a beach where everybody gets old really fast.
That's the movie,
and that's it. That's the whole movie. Yeah. And no spoiler alerts, but like
this is another question.
Like there isn't even any big like. It's just the characters go through the movie. Like you just that's it.
There's no reveal.
I mean, do you want... Like,
no, whatever. People
can see it, but I'm just saying that walking out of it, I was like...
Okay.
I don't feel like I got anything out of that movie that I didn't see in the trailer. Versus, like, I then went and saw... I was on the flight back home from Phoenix, and I was watching The Forever Purge. And, say what you want about, those Purge movies. And they're all insane, right? They're all crazy. But, like, you don't know how it's going to end.
Right.
You have never... And you have no clue what's going to happen.
That's why they make so many of them, I guess.
Right, exactly.
Well, let's go to Super Chats.
All right.
See what the people have to Super Chat. If you haven't already, give us those Super Chats. And smash that like button. And apparently now...
CCP Delinda Est. CCP Delinda Est.
What? What is
CCP
that?
CCP must take down the CCP.
Oh, okay.
In Latin.
There's a super thanks now. I guess you can super thank us.
Wait, I thought you said it was only the...
I don't know if it's only, but I think it's basically super chat for regular videos.
Okay.
So you can like leave a comment, but pay and it appears at the top, whatever. It's super comments, I guess. Amazing. Call it super thanks. But, I guess people, you know what this is going to do? I think people are going to advertise on videos. They're going to go onto a video that's got a lot of views, and they're going to start outbidding each other for the top spot, and they're going to be promoting their brands.
I'm going to have MyPillow promos on all of you videos after this, Tim. I hope you know.
Well, I'll tell you this. If you
They'll be paying
spent
for themselves.
Money and you made more, I would gladly accept the Humble Pillow Merchant's comments that fund the show.
I am but a Humble Pillow Merchant.
All right, let's see what we got.
So this is the most comfortable episode I've ever done.
Oh, look at this guy.
Going for the lumbar support.
I have to be honest. These are great chairs.
Oh, they're that's awesome. Actually really... This is the supreme firmness on this one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because actually Tanya got us a bunch of them, and so she did like a random...
MyPillow.
So there's different firmness levels you can get. But this is key, by the way. And I am going to say this, and you have to put your MyPillows through one cycle in the dryer.
Really?
When you first purchase them. There is a little card that says you need to do this.
Really?
And it kind of, it activates the interlocking foam on the inside.
Oh,
otherwise, okay. They're kind of, and like, I get all these comments every once in a while, maybe like 10%, they'll say, oh man, this is so limp, this is the worst pillow. Sack full of pack of peanuts. Yeah, what's going on? It's like, did you throw out the little card that said, that guys, put it through the dryer. Just one time, not even like 15 minutes is enough. It doesn't even need to be like the full 45 or whatever.
Just to clarify for everybody, these chairs actually did come with these like lumbar support things that were not that good. The chairs are great. These are great chairs by Boston, but everybody basically was like, I don't need this thing in my back.
Actually with the pillow, this is quite nice. Well, I'm not going to lie. This is actually pretty sweet.
We'll steal it from you and we'll keep it.
No way, man. This is mine.
We'll write posts on it.
I'll fight you for it.
All right. Let's see what we got here. Jacqueline Pierce says, hi, Tim. I sent an email earlier to see if you're hiring an archivist. Please hire me.
Ooh.
I don't know what an archivist would do.
So I think an archivist is like someone who's kind of, they're archiving you. They're archiving the show, the story.
Oh, I see.
It's almost like someone's writing a daily journal in real time for you.
I don't know if we need that. But that would be kind of cool to have like a library of content and stuff like that.
Right. So it's like keywords. Something that like, you know, one day when all of this is over, it will all, like, the whole story of...
We don't need an archivist, but we need fact checkers. We need a fact checker / frame checker. So this is somebody who's going to go through a story and then be like, hey...
I think frame checker is important.
Right. Because that's one thing the media doesn't do. They don't fact check anymore either. So, but frame checking is important because, you know, someone could write... I guess you get the point. If you say that the Republicans are trying to pass a voter suppression bill, that's framing.
Right.
When I was actually...
My favorite one of these of all time, I forget who it was, but somebody wrote, they wrote, controversial University of Toronto professor Jordan Peterson.
Right.
And someone was like, wait a minute.
Why
right?
is he controversial?
But not even that is... There's no position called the controversial professor at the University of Toronto Psychology Department.
Right,
it's just professor. So why did you add that? So adding that word is a framing device.
Oh, this is, so yeah, we need a frame and fact checker, but I'll look at the resumes over at jobs. You can email jobs@timcast.com. Conti123 says, Tim, can you look into California banning gaming PCs due to its high power usage? The fridge uses more power than a PC. Yeah, I heard that.
I saw the headline as well.
I think it's Bitcoin.
You think they're linking him?
Elizabeth Warren came out and she was like, there's a bunch of shadowy coders. We're going to have control of the money. No, that's not true. It's open source.
They're going after the gamers now.
Gaming PCs are used for money.
Yeah.
So they're going to try and shut it all down.
I'll say this, you know, and I know there's people that, I know Peter Thiel's like not big on Bitcoin, but I think there's a lot. I think the establishment is freaked out about Bitcoin.
Absolutely.
I actually disagree with Peter Thiel on that one. I don't think Bitcoin is a Chinese plot or anything like that. I actually think that it is something, right? And this, by the way, people get confused and they say like, well, is it a good store of value? You know, it's not about being it's not an investment, right? You can't think of it that way. It is a currency that is separate from the federal system.
Yeah, a currency, call it whatever you want. It's a system of value in whatever capacity.
Right, it's a system of value, right? You're not, the people look at it as investment property. Okay, yeah, like, it goes up and it goes down, but that's not the way to think about
it. I don't think Peter Thiel is paying attention all that much. Because if he was,
Because up until a couple of months ago, China was like super into Bitcoin and they were using
oil rigs. I'm talking about the culture war and what's happening with kids and critical race applied principles. Like, the dude could snap his fingers and create a functioning news outlet. He nukes Gawker. And now
Gawker's back.
Well, yeah, but it's a skin suit worn by other. But they're gonna be as creepy as Gawker was anyway.
It's Gawky. It's a skin suit like the new Star Wars and the new He-Man and they're all skin suits.
Peter Thiel, he's the guy, man. He went after Gawker. He was like, we're not gonna play this fake news game. He could snap his fingers and create 10 independent news outlets that did real journalism.
Peter, let's do it, man. What do you think?
Look, you know, I'll be honest, it's not so easy to do. So he could figuratively snap his fingers and then he has the resources and the wealth to do it. And he does know people who could do it, but I'm surprised when I see very prominent and wealthy individuals who are critical of the media ecosystem and do nothing to fund it. There's a handful of people
to fund an alternate ecosystem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. To donate to contribute to invest in. I'm not going to pretend it's an easy thing to do. So even though I'm kind of like, they could do it, well, you know, they would need to find someone they trusted. But there's a lot of really wealthy people that absolutely could be like, I want to see real journalism get done. What can we do? And then just do ask somebody, hey, look into some people. Let me know who you like. But not only that, some of these high-profile personalities promote journalists they do like and trust. I'm like, well, then fund them. Give them money to hire people and expand their operations. You know what? I'll tell you this. Fortunately for us, we launched this website, timcast.com, got so many people to sign up and make sure you become a member that I was flabbergasted. I couldn't believe it. I think, well, I'll spare the details in that in a certain regard. I'll say this. We gained so many members instantly that I was like, I guess we're launching a company from this, you know, because otherwise I wouldn't know what to do with the memberships. I'm not just going to do bonus segments and then have this capital. And I was like, no, we're going to hire journalists, man. We're going to take these resources and put it to incredible use. What am I going to buy? Do I need my own massive gym or like, a theme park or
spaceship?
Spaceship? No. If I was going to buy something.
Yes.
And someone said you can buy a Ferrari or you can buy a year of good journalism. I'd be like, oh,
did you see
the good journalism, dude?
Was it Virgin? I think was saying that the price was like less than a Ferrari to fly on it.
Oh, to fly into space or whatever?
Yeah.
Oh,
but it was only like a couple.
They're doing rocket planes.
It was only like a couple of minutes, so I was like, right. I don't know if I'd pay that much for just a couple of minutes.
I'm pretty sure Virgin is doing rocket planes, where the plane goes up, gets real close, and then rocket thrusts into orbit and then back down.
That's right.
All right, let's see what we got. Nicholas Lipset says, on your video of evictions, a former friend of mine lived with me for college in a house my family owned. He moved to another city, refused to pay rent, and bought a new car. Screwed us out of $3,000 plus. Yikes. David Kachanowicz says, in honor of Ian, insert the Federal Reserve comment here. That's right, everybody. Pour out a super chat for Ian. He is sick today. Making too much bread.
Not the Rona, though, just so everybody knows. Not the Rona.
Not the Rona. I, Sir Toast, says, it's just Sir Toast. Fourth super chat. Net revenue 5 minutes before the show starts. Someone knocked on my door offering the COVID jab. They are going door to door in MN now. Time for me to move. Really? Oh, you gotta move. You just tell
offering
them no, right?
It or like offering you a chance to sign up for it?
I don't know. I think have you seen the video from North Carolina? They're administering the vaccine on the porch.
Wow.
Did you see that video of the army guys walking to a 7-Eleven and giving the vaccine to a guy working there? I'm like, dude, this is
optics. Optics, right?
Google announced that they're going to mandate vaccines for their employees.
Right.
I said, I wonder what'll happen if people refuse. I wonder how many people refuse and quit. Cameron Kasky says there'll be a bunch of job openings for people who aren't stupid. And I was like, and there's going to be a lot of people who can't get the vaccine and then don't, lose their jobs. And then, of course, cue the childish lack of wisdom response from many people, including Cameron. You mean to tell me you're saying there will be no medical exemptions? I just, child, friend, what do you think a medical exemption is? Do they think that you can walk up and say, I hereby assert a medical exemption? They say, okay, you can come on in.
No,
they're going to be like, okay, here's our list of exemptions. And many of the things won't be covered because exemptions don't cover everything. If they did, people would just all claim it. So what'll happen? There are some medications that can cause, say, severe tendonitis. They might say, we're not going to exempt you from this medication because of the side effects. You might say, well, I have an underlying health condition that I could get this, but I'm concerned about the risk, so I'm going to choose not to.
There was that girl at BYU who had, she had the, what do you call it, Gillies-Bowers syndrome, and she's like, I can't take it. They've told me that this is, you know, one of the side effects.
But if you can't take it, that is understood with medical exemptions. What if it's a woman who might be pregnant? And so they say, you must get the vaccine. Do you have any underlying health conditions that would prevent you from getting the vaccine? No, but I might be pregnant.
They're trying to get pregnant.
Right. And the doctors, my understanding, have advised, okay, well, then you shouldn't get it.
Right.
So now they're like, I think trying is not as good of an example as maybe, because she doesn't know. And now they say, you have no choice, you have no confirmed pregnancy, so you're not exempt. Okay, well, I might be. My doctor says I shouldn't take it if I am, but we don't know for sure just yet. So they're going to say, I'm going to choose not to get it. Well, then you can leave. Bye. You lost your job.
There's so many people, by the way, who get out of deployments in the military by doing that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think I'm pregnant. Oops, what if you're
What if you're a cancer survivor? The official medical policy on cancer survivors, as per the CDC, which I pulled up previously, is that you need to get clearance from your doctor specifically because they typically advise against many vaccines for cancer survivors. They say there are serious risks for those who are immunocompromised from cancer treatments. The doctor might say, the risk's low enough that I think you'll be okay to do it, so you don't have the underlying condition, but you choose not to because of the potential risk. Okay, you lose your job.
Right, so this...
kids think it's all black and white.
This gets into a... And by the way, those doctors, right, they're going to err on the side of that, because if they know that this is the side that the insurance company's on, and this is the side that the employer's on, and that the government's on, they're going to go with that, because they know then, well, I can't be sued because I was following the guidance, right? So now you've got doctors, and this is a huge problem in the medical community, because you've got doctors that are following guidance and percentages and statistics rather than patients, understanding what's going on with that biological life form that's sitting in front of them and what their specific situation might be.
Well, people's doctors are, but it's the greater culture of celebrities pushing the stuff and the mandates. But we'll move on. We got James Burns says, it wasn't Bon Jovi, it was Def Leppard with green M&Ms.
Oh, there you go.
Def Leppard and green M&Ms.
You were pretty close.
Well, I don't know how close about that. All right, let's see. Yevstaki Civic, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. Hey, Tim, I'm a trucker. And from my experience, freight rates went way up, an increase of 40% since 2019. The reason there's a shortage of drivers is because older ones retire, and starting pay in the industry struggles to compete with unemployment.
Mm.
Wow. This is them gutting the system, but letting everyone down slowly so they don't freak out when the system is gutted.
Right.
It's frogs in a pot, man. All right, let's see. Kunti Dominguez says, I work for a bank, and we are now reaching out to individuals who can be evicted out as early as September 1st, and the number is very large. Love the show. Wow, man.
Wow.
All right, Knight says, I joined Timecast.com this past week. I do not know how to join the after show on the website. I am watching with my iPhone. Do I need to be on PC? Maybe it's Timecast.
You're on Time. This is like when, what's that, the Mockbusters? When the Asylum puts out, like, you know, there's the Avengers, and then they'll put out a thing called Super Avengers, right? You know, and it's like right next. It's the, you know, it's the Walmart brand, Tim Pool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So on the homepage, if you're logged in, you will see the latest two members' podcasts. And then if you click members only, then you'll see a list of all of the members only show. You can also click the search and search for a name and find all the members only segments we have. Cause I think we have two with, like, you know, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. We've got a couple with a bunch of different people, you know, right, that have been on the show multiple times. All right. Let's see.
I actually got it. I'm now a member of the, whatever it's called. And so I've been using it. It's quite fun, actually.
Rampton says Adrian Curry is trolling the chat again. LOL. Good. We're glad. She was a blast. We had her on the show. Everybody loves you, Adrian. Thank you for hanging out. Turk Longwell says, Tim, you'll be doing an underground pirate internet show in 2030. You'll move around a lot, but don't worry. Patriots will be everywhere. I don't know, man. I might just be in a van down by the river by 2030.
Yeah, with a ham radio.
Or I will own nothing and I will be happy.
You will be so happy.
I will be so happy. I mean, you know, the thing is for me is...
Give you a shot for that, too.
I'm fairly minimalist. Like, I don't need things to be happy. I like... You know, chilling down by the river.
Yeah, that is something where, you know, I read a story recently about this family who was, you know, dad was struggling with alcoholism, you know, in like their 30s. They had a couple of kids and they quit their jobs. They both had 9-to-5s, cubicle jobs, quit that, bought a bus, renovated the entire thing from YouTube videos. Like, neither of them had any background in, like, work around the house or anything like that. You watched YouTube videos, renovated the whole thing, got freelance jobs, and now they just drive around the country with their kids. And it's all about spending time together. Yeah. It's about making memories. It's about living for your family. And I just thought, man, that's a better life. And that, by the way, you want to quote, by the way, and I would say this to all, like, the, you know, the DSA types and my Antifa friends and everything else. You want to fight the system. That's how you fight the system. Get some chickens. That's fighting the system.
Stop funding Wall Street and taxes and the war.
Just check out. Yeah. Literally just check out.
Dozerman says, I know this is off subject, but here in Central Florida, we didn't have a love bug season. I saw one or two love bugs, but very strange to have them all over the place. Could it be the apocalypse is happening?
Maybe the cicadas ate them.
Yeah, maybe the cicadas.
Did they have cicadas they came in Florida? Out. I don't know.
Yeah. Brudex. No, that was like that was up here. That was
yeah, I think Brudex thing. Was northern. I don't know if it was southern. But maybe some people brought them down when they were fleeing the lockdowns.
Yeah. LG Alucard says, Tim, if you want to understand the future that awaits America under the Democrats, watch the movie The Perfect Dictatorship. Mind will be blown.
I haven't seen that.
Interesting.
But it's not just Democrats, and people need to understand that there are a ton of establishment Republicans, many of them been brought off by Wall Street, many of them been bought off by Silicon Valley, right? They are going along to get along with all of this. You saw this in the Trump administration when there were people who said, we just need a better deal with China. We can't not have a deal with China. We just need to find better terms and, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Give them more.
And then Trump would say, wow, I mean, if you guys are all, you know, for this, okay, we'll go for that. But I wish he had just gone with his instincts on that, because you heard him on the campaign trail and they made fun of him, by the way.
Right.
They made fun of Trump for calling out China so much.
Yep. All right. 7FD says, hey, Tim and Poso, I live close by La Jolla, Texas, next to the river. Our legal admin traffics aliens into the country. A lot of us are tired and people are freaking out. If it ain't cartels, it's this mess. Crazy. Jason Green.
Huge business, by the way. Cartel, the human trafficking, huge business. Jason, and then when they get deported, you bring them back.
Right.
And they got to pay again.
That's right. Money, money, money. Jason Green says, please invite Kurt Schlichter on to talk about Kelly Turnbull series, Prophetic. Heard about them last week and haven't been able to put down the series. His books are starting to come true. God help us all. I'm pretty sure we've had Kurt on the show, right?
We have. We'll have him back soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kurt's hilarious. My favorite thing about Kurt Schlichter is that he's always on. I've never talked to him in a situation where he hasn't been on, right? Like, he's, even if it's just me and him on the phone, like, he's coking and joking and as just as hilarious as you'd think you would be at literally all times.
Really Now says, read in Greta voice, how dare you? Vosht 1985 says, Wawa sucks. Sheets for the win.
The only thing true about Sheets is its name.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, look, we have Sheets all over the place, and I ordered food from them, which is a funny thing to do from a gas station, and I'm not going to do it again because its name stood true.
Yep. Sheets gives you the...
I'm not trying to be mean, you know, like, a lot of people like them, but... All right. Amanda says, Poso 2024. Oh, there you go.
We'll see.
Oxwagon says, hello from South Africa. Today, while I was buying groceries, I had to listen to the leader of our fastest-growing political party at a hate rally outside, yelling about how he's going to teach white people some manners. It's like Weimar Germany. Sad. Yikes.
I mean, that's the critical race theory in action country right there.
David Burleson says, Ian is sick from sniffing all that graphene he's been hoarding. Just imagine, like, Ian, he's got, like, black graphene all over his nose, and his eyes are, like, bloodshot, and he's like, oh. Graphene.
Oh, so you saw him.
Yeah. He walked out of his room. It's like, oh.
The experiment was a failure.
No, he was, like, seeing the future, man.
Number 27 will be a success.
DMT times 300. All right, Green James says, do you think that state convention is a possibility? If so, would you support it? What do you think is the best course of action that everyday citizens can take to preserve our Bill of Rights? A state convention, I think it's possible, and I would support it. What are we, two states away from a state convention or something like that? You need 38 states, I think.
I mean, or maybe here's the thing, though. You're not going to have a... You can have your state convention, but you're not going to get any traction without a meaningful percentage of the elites on your side, right? You can have your convention and write up whatever you want, but it's not going to get any traction because, you know, you're still thinking...
Well, state convention bypasses the federal government, doesn't it?
It does, but keep in mind that you're still in the mode of thinking that, like, elected representatives are the ones who are making the decisions.
Right.
They're just not. So, yeah. I mean, you can... You know, this is what I say to, you know, my wayward libertarian friends, that you say, oh, it's the state. It is, but the state isn't just the state, right? That's why I talk about this concept of the overstate, where they're,
right.
You know, the politicians are not the ones who are necessarily making these
media
decisions.
Banks.
Yeah, you have to put it all
people
together,
like
all
Ed
the
Buck.
Various nodes of power. The greatest issue, right, that's not talked about is the fact that Ed Buck was a known secret. Right, this is one of those open secrets in the Hollywood area
about
for
Seth MacFarlane
years and years, right? And nobody said anything because he made donations to all the right people, and so he was out praying, actually praying on these people who were at risk, For years, kills two of them, and then finally, the community has enough of a response to actually do something about Ed Buck. The real situation isn't necessarily what he did; it's the fact that people enabled him to do it.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Stephen Booty says, "I'm a landlord in New Jersey. Got lucky this past year as my tenants didn't lose their jobs and kept paying. Can only imagine if they stopped." Yeah, I'd imagine.
Wow. That can't be too many people in that boat.
All right, let's see. Ian Hall says, point of order, Samsung is made in Vietnam, not China. Thank you. There you go. Josiah Padula says, Eric hasn't put the name of the second factory on his site after saying he'd do so immediately. Not to mention the site has lots of remnant text buttons from some sort of site builder template that hasn't been removed yet. Well, that's good criticism. I pushed him on it when he was like, I'm not going to say the name. I'm like, are you kidding? Like, I guess he was saying he couldn't say the name because maybe he can't really pronounce the name and didn't know what it was. He should have known what it was. Otherwise, and he shouldn't have brought it up, I guess, because now people want to know what the name of the factory is. And I think it's not good that he did not put it on his website. He said he was going to do that. So, Eric, if you're listening, get that up on your website and let people know where your phones are being made, because people don't want, you know, garbage checking their phones. 2-bit user says, Tim, remember the Deep Space Nine episode about the sanctuary districts in 2024 and the Bell riots? All homeless were put in walled cities. Was that where, which one was that? Do you remember that one?
They go
back in time or something?
I forget if they went back in time or they were just discussing it. But this was a huge,
or Q did it.
This was a huge deal, though, in not just Deep Space Nine lore, but sort of like the entire Star. And I'm totally not a Trekker, but like I've seen, you know, various shows of it. And I know, but I know the Bell riots and that 2024 is a huge part of like how the new world was created in the Star Trek verse.
Yeah. Yeah, there were the cops were given drugs, you know, the SWAT cops. All right, Amazing. Let's see. Mr. Obvious says, our defeats in the Olympics are a perfect example of what happens when unqualified diversity hires are chosen over merit. Maybe Simone Biles is like the best of the best. Though.
I wouldn't say that about Simone Biles.
Yeah,
no.
She's like legit.
No, she's
the best.
Legit is the best. But
she's doing tricks beyond the skill level of the gymnastics team.
I think she has like five different feats that are all there's like the Biles on beam, the Biles on
right.
On the mat, the Biles two.
The Biles two. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just think that we're getting to this point where people are celebrating her bowing out. Instead of saying, we respect you and we hope you get better, it's a shame we didn't win.
Right, it's a shame, you know? But, you know, we wish you the best. We pray for you as a human being. But, you know, like, again, you're just in a different category now.
Yeah. Jack Daw says, I'm a truck driver. If these local businesses reach $30 an hour or more, I'm done driving. One less truck delivering. Could you imagine? We had John Schneider on the show, Papa John.
Yeah.
In the member segment, he mentioned that there's a pizzeria he knows where they're paying $35 an hour to the cooks to make the pizzas. $35 an hour to make pizzas.
Where's that?
I think he said in New York.
Sign up.
Because if he doesn't, that's what he had to pay. That was the market rate because people are getting free money.
Wow.
What people don't understand is that time is money, right?
Does he still own a couple stores himself?
I don't think so. I don't think. I joked about him opening his own franchise, and he was like, well, you know. But
he should. He totally should.
Time is money, right?
No, he should do, by the way. Do you remember a couple times ago when I was on, we were talking about those Pizza Huts, like the original, like nostalgia restaurants?
Oh, the buildings that are abandoned?
Yeah, he should do, he should open like a nostalgia pizzeria where, don't call it Pizza Hut or whatever, but you can have like, you walk in and it's the 90s.
You know,
TV, you know what I mean?
I'm going to start my own pizza place called Papa Tim's.
Papa Tim's.
And we're going to have garlic sauce and pepperoncinis and... Yeah.
But the point is, when you walk in, it's like there's like a 90s TV playing and you can change the channels,
yeah.
But it's all like preloaded. Yeah, it's all UHF and maybe a remote.
Oh, yeah.
And it's 90s
yeah.
And there's 90s music and there's like an old school jukebox.
That's a good idea.
I'm telling you.
So the idea. So I saw this story about Blockbuster where they created a section of the store.
There'll be a movie rental section.
No. The section of the store that was a 90s living room. And they had like a pizza box and like a soda and chips, and it was all the old style graphics of Pepsi.
Nintendo 64.
And there was a TV. No, I think it was like, I don't think they had 64, but it was
SNES.
Like
SNES.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you could come in and they Ubered out it for like, they Ubered it out for like 3 nights so you could have a nostalgic 90s. And I was like, what if you created
No, do that, but a chain.
Right. So my idea was to do five rooms, a 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s.
Okay, so in each room is a different era.
And the TVs are preloaded with...
I mean, this is what every 50s diner is, right? So you just do that, but with different decades.
But it would be cool to, yeah, right.
So here's your 80s, here's your 70s, your 60s, and then you can rent
You'd
whichever one
You'd have to stock up
night.
On like 90s Mountain Dew and Pepsi or whatever.
You would, yeah.
Yeah, all the crazy, and people go in there, and the right. TVs are UHF with the antennas, and then you'd have like one of the guys walk out and move the antenna, like, and then the TV is like, you know,
so
static.
So you know the Smashing Pumpkins song, 1979?
Yeah.
So I think somebody tweeted recently that came out in 1995.
Right.
So 16 years. So the equivalent today would be a song called 2005.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
I'll do a cover of 1979 called 2005, and I'll sing about what it was like in 2005.
Exactly.
And then we'll do it.
My buddy and I who does some writing on the side with me, we were talking about doing like, I don't know, graphic novel or movie script, but call it like the summer of 99. Yeah.
Danny says, Tim, not sure if you saw what happened to Crowder, but the straight up death wishings he's gotten has blown my mind. Never knew the hatred people have in their hearts all because of someone who doesn't agree with the establishment. Yes, I did see what happened with Crowder. I wish him a speedy recovery and the
prayers
best.
Prayers up for Crowder.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And these tweets, man, just these people are sick.
Just understand. Sick no, understand. Understand. Like this pathology, right? They would put you all in gulags.
Yes.
If they could. Right?
Just give them the word and they will
listen to the J6 hearings. Listen to the things they're saying. Well, listen to the comments. This isn't a right. Trump is gone. So now who's the target? You are the target.
We'll talk about this for the bonus.
You are the target. Right. We'll get into that. Yeah. But
because the insurrection from the left,
response to Crowder is just another example that I say this on Twitter, I'm like, are you paying attention yet? Are you paying attention yet?
Jeffrey,
look what they said to Rush Limbaugh when he died.
Look what they said about it. Jeffrey Pfaff says, Peter Thiel is funding and working with Rumble, Tim. Yes, that is true.
That's
absolutely
true. That is true.
Right on.
I think J.D. Vance put some money in that as well.
We upload to Rumble and use their infrastructure as well. And good for Peter Thiel. I wasn't trying to drag him saying he wasn't doing anything. I'm just saying journalism is different from just Rumble. So it's good that he is funding stuff. My respect. But and my respect for everything he went through with Gawker. I mean, you put out... The things Gawker did, man. If Gawker existed today in its previous state,
yeah, I hope people don't think that we were like getting on,
yeah,
you
no,
know,
no, no.
Teal for any of that.
Gawker would be called far right if it published the things it published back then.
Oh yeah,
they were outing gay men, and it's gross stuff.
I mean,
it's
and
gross.
Like doxing for just the thrill of doxing,
right.
I mean, it was ridiculous. People have this, there's like this, they're trying to nostalgize it, right? And the new version is supposed to be like, we're the best, we're the better parts of Gawker. No, you're trash. You've always been trash. You belong on the ash heap of history, along with communism and all the ugly communists.
All right. Rhythmic Riot says, people who keep mentioning Yuri Bezmenov need to know warnings about communism go back much further. Watch the 1958 speech from Robert Welch, who lays out the steps on how to destroy the free world.
All communism is supported by ugly people because communism is based in envy.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. There's a prominent YouTuber I was hanging out with years and years ago, and one of the things I had mentioned was that when you go...
They'll never admit it, by the way.
When you go to the DNC, you notice that most of the people there are like frumpy, short, squeaky voices. And you go to the RNC, and you'll see a lot of taller, chiseled guys and busty women. And it actually is true. Multiple studies have found that attractive people tend to be more conservative. And it makes perfect sense if you agree with leftist ideology, the idea of privilege, that people who are attractive have it easier in life. They have privileges. So thus, they think they don't need collective support.
I mean, beauty privilege is a thing. No, but at the same time, looks maxing is also a thing.
The funny thing is we pointed that out on this show.
Right.
And even cited, I think, three different studies.
Yeah.
And the Young Turks made fun of my appearance for it, which was the weirdest thing ever. And kind of a self-owned because they don't realize that I'm not a conservative. And so they're like, he's so dumb and like, look how ugly he is. I'm like, I know, but I'm kind of a liberal. So
it wouldn't surprise me that Cenk is a communist.
I mean, I think Cenk is just a corporatist.
You know? At this point, yeah.
Yeah. Total corporatist. That's his MO. And that's why he finds himself in this really weird position where he has so many former employees who are speaking truth to power and he's not. And I think he's jealous about it, to be honest. All right. Let's see.
Because remember, the actual people leading the movement. So people, when I said that on Twitter the other day, but they were like, what about young Stalin? Young Stalin was pretty good looking man. And I said, well, look what communism did to him, number one. But number two, the actual leaders don't actually believe in any of this stuff.
Of course,
right?
Authoritarian stole power.
Right? They just want to be in power, right? We're talking about the rubes. We're talking about all of you that are following
them. He tricked the ugly people.
Who do you think went into the gulags first?
Oh, yeah, right? all the male models.
Right.
All right. Kyoka Soma says, my org created a new email distribution list that seems to include all 500 employees except me. Third time I recently complained about their critical CRT indoctrination. I said I'd be looking for an attorney if they continue. Ooh, interesting. All right, let's see. We'll do one more. Samuel J. Weber says, name it Papa Pools. So the nickname is Pee-Pees. All right, Pee-Pee's Pizza. Papa Pool's Pizza, PPP, 3 P's. There you go, PPP.
3P.
My friends, if you haven't already, give that like button a little tap. Subscribe to this channel and become a member at TimCast.com. We're going to have a bonus segment coming up. Should be up around 11 or so p.m. That's usually when it goes up. And we're going to talk about what's going on with this Capitol stuff, the insurrection, the hypocrisy from the left. So definitely go and check out TimCast.com. You can follow the show at TimCastIRL. You can follow me at TimCast. And Jack, you want to shout out anything?
Yeah, follow Human Events, humanevents.com. We're actually going to be putting out a new investigative piece on everyone's favorite, the Lincoln Project. They've made some new hires, getting some new funding. We are on top of all of it, so can't break any of that tonight because it's not quite ready yet, but go to humanevents.com. You're going to see that very soon here. As always, go to mypillow.com. Use promo code POSO. Get all of the best. And seriously, you can actually get stuff for a lot better price. The products are amazing. Put your pillow in the dryer, folks.
Oh,
good advice.
Do that.
Yeah, and you guys are more than welcome to follow me on Twitter at Sour Patch Kids as I continue my quest to have more followers than Sour Patch Kids.
Go to timcast.com for the members only podcast, and we will see you all there.